Samet uns von Dachen, hilf die Verfeiterung mit uns. Und zu Finde von National Treasury. Wir sind es. It's a standing item that we decided upon in our very first meeting. Of actively monitoring the department in here with the sole objective of ensuring that this department moves from its disclaimers qualify to a clean audit before we leave office. And we've got 18 months in which to achieve that as this portfolio committee at least. Inspecting judge, historically, this type of interaction across Parliament only happened through scope, which was 18 months post the activity. And certainly when I was active and in charge of scope, we agitated that this thing must change. You can't have a situation where the department comes 18 months after the fact and we expect that government must be successful in its implementation. And having been an activist in that regard when I was in Skopje, it was obvious that whenever I was moved from Skopje, I was free to make it happen wherever I was. And that is the reason why we're here. Mr. Boyani, you might not know it, but there probably were 5 DGs before you in Skopje. All of them failed to turn this department around. In my time when I was in Skopje, all of them failed to turn the department around. I'm sure Ms. Schreiner will confirm that, as well as Ms. Woodley, as well as Mareka, because they were with us all along this time. Now we can't continue to do the same thing and expect different results. It's just not possible, and certainly this committee is not going to do that. We can't do the same things for 10 years and expecting to change, and that's why we adopted this attitude, expecting that. Not only inviting the department, but we get Treasury, because Treasury has a responsibility, according to the PFMA, of a degree of oversight. They have a responsibility, according to the PFMA, of a degree of oversight. Audit committees were put in place because this government felt that we needed somebody independent enough but close enough to be able to turn this department and all other government departments around and have a responsibility to report to South Africa on their performance and effectiveness. And that's why we have this yesterday. The Auditor General, with a mandate from the Constitution, has a responsibility as well. So it's not just a compliance issue, AG, it's a constitutional responsibility that you are expected to perform, and that's why we have you here today. And of course, because the portfolio committee also has a constitutional mandate to oversee the department. we do all these things, I'm repeating, because we cannot have a situation where correctional services continues to be a department that has a disclaimer, a qualified report for 10 years in a row. And it's not because of the DLE or the disclaimer of qualified report, but that is a symptom of service delivery that is not happening. When you have a qualification, then there's service delivery that's not happening. 2 decades into our democracy, I'm not going to allow that to happen. I'm not going to allow that to happen. Something must change. Something must change. So that is the objective of the meeting, and everybody, thank you very much for coming. In support of what we think is very important for South Africa. So that is the meeting. We have one agenda item. We're going to discuss the operations of this department and be supported by National Treasury and supported by the AG, by the Audit Commission and also by the AG. Because we acknowledge that as members of Parliament, we don't have all the expertise and speciality. So we rely on our partners to assist us in that regard. So you are invited to actively participate and expect questions to be directed to yourself as well. The inspecting judge, very welcome, sir, but the formal introduction of the inspecting judge will be done tomorrow. You are very welcome, sir. Minister will be here tomorrow, where she will formally introduce you to the committee, and at the same time we will go through this process with your department, and I think it will be a good induction for you, inspecting judge. So really that is what is happening today. Commissioner, let me just start by saying, and it's not new to you that we've repeated this many times. If what you're going to say to this committee is embarrassing or will show up your failure, and therefore you choose to change what you're going to say to us, if you don't want to be embarrassed or prove your failure, you rather not say anything. What we're saying to you is don't come here and give us, what do you call it, spin information. You rather not say anything to this committee. I'm not sure if you're aware, Commissioner. Last week you had a delegation representing you. And we said it last week, and I'm saying it again today, that we see correctional services as an entity and not as an individual. So CFO, you can't come here and say it was not in my time when this happened, because you are the CFO today. Or I can't answer this question because it was somebody else. Or give us a document that says, this is what we're bringing to you now, but grand, this thing is going to be cleaned up tomorrow or something like that. That is the information we received last week, and it's an affront to the Portfolio Committee. It's an affront to the Portfolio Committee that correctional services come to us with information that they themselves admit is not the exact thing. Correctional services come to us and say, these questions you're asking us are very difficult because, you know, this thing happened before our time, and we're probably not the best people to answer. And you come to Parliament and you say that. I take strong exception. You weren't here, Commissioner. I asked your people to report that to you. I'm saying it to you now. I take strong exception to that. So we are asking you that if you report to us, please report to us as factually as possible. And that is why we've got experts here to verify what you are saying to us. Or rather, indicate that you cannot answer that question and you'll find another way of dealing with that question. I think we have to set the record straight, ladies and gentlemen. I think we have to set the record straight. I just want to go to the audit report of last year, because again to the audit committee, I think it was last year, I speak under correction. We asked the question at the time, when you prepare your report for Parliament Audit Committee, are you sincere in what you're telling South Africans? Because this annual report becomes a communicator to South Africans. We will get to you, but you say somewhere in your report that you will monitor, the management of this committee, and you'll do what you need to do, and that's why we called you back a second time, so we're grateful that we'll get to your part of it. Before we allow you to introduce yourselves, starting with Treasury, AG, Audit Committee, then the Department, Inspecting Judge. I think maybe you should do yours tomorrow so that we don't confuse it, but we do acknowledge your presence here. Commissioner, you're going to, after you introduce yourself and your team, brief us very briefly on what transpired with the escape of the so-called birthday rate. You owe it to us and you owe it to South Africa. What has transpired and what corrective steps have been taken? We're not discussing it, but at least you owe it to us. I can't walk around and when somebody approaches me as the chairperson, I'm in the dark about what has happened to something that is as serious as somebody with 137 or so cases being discharged from correctional services. So please just give us a very short story of what is happening there, and what has happened there, and what is going to be done about those that might have been grossly negligent. We owe it to South Africa. So can we start with National Treasury to introduce yourself, followed by the Audit Committee, followed by the AG and then the Department. National Treasury.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Bernard Crowder. I'm from the Public Finance Division in National Treasury.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Doug Hafu, Office of the Accountant General, National Treasury.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Members. My name is Pukwila Makudubene, and I'm also from the Office of the Accountant General.
Good morning, Chair, and to all the members. Brenda Matumis, the Chair of the Audit Committee, DCS.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Rob Chennison. I'm a member of the Audit Committee.
Good morning, Chair, and Honourable Members. My name is Charles Madao. I'm a member of the Audit Committee.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and officials. My name is Barry Reeder. One of the corporate executives from the Office of the Auditor General.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Soli Chiani, Senior Manager responsible for the Audit of the Department of Correctional Services.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Musa Shongwa, also from the AG, one of the business services responsible for, among others, the Audit of Correctional Services.
Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, my name is Tom Moyani, National Commissioner of Correctional Services.
Good Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Zakaria Mutese, the Chief Deputy Commissioner responsible for corrections.
Good morning, Chairperson and the Honourable Member. My name is Sipiwe Sokela, the Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Committee Members. My name is Tungamati Bela, the Chief Deputy Commissioner, Corporate Services.
Good morning, Chairperson and the Honourable Members. My name is Ntobeko Mketane. I'm the Acting Deputy Commissioner for Development and Care.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Tabashi Murthy. I'm the Chief Deputy Commissioner of the Branch Accent SIDEC.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Members. My name is Ntabiso Musuke. I'm the Chief Deputy Commissioner in Government Information Technology.
Good morning, Chair and the Members. My name is Nito Webalin, Internal Audit Director.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and the Members. I'm Samakumi Jinga, the Head of Internal Control and Compliance.
Honorable Chair and Members, good morning. My name is Ugani Jamini, Deputy Commissioner, Internal Audit.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Mango Banguvo, Deputy Commissioner, Supply Chain Management.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and the committee members. My name is Nandi Marega, Deputy Commissioner for Financial and Management Accounting.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Sidney Chakalaka.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is P. Kombako. I'm the Deputy Commissioner in the Government Relations. Thank you.
You introduce yourself, Mr. Self.
Hi, I'm James Self. I'm a committee member.
I'm also quite a committee member.
Winnie Nguyenya, portfolio committee member. Corrections
Secretary. Lena Beck, committee member.
Matavati, researcher for the committee.
My name is Wilson Smith, I chair the committee. Commissioner, can we hand over to you?
Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Committee, the issue that you want briefing on is on Nlungisim Charlie. Nlungisim Charlie was brought to Johannesburg Correctional Services on the 10th of December 2010. For a case of rape. I want to repeat, for a case of rape. That was the only charge. And I want to indicate that we are not aware of the multiplicity of the charges that he was carrying with him that are being abounded in the press and in the public space. One charge came with him on admission that is rape. Subsequent to that, on 2011, on the 14th of October, the investigating officer came to pick up Njali for a court appearance, which was for an escape, which occurred in 2008, which DCS was not aware of. Just want to put the record straight. He was brought to Correctional Services on the 10th of December 2010. The alleged charges in ADT was for rape, not rape charges, for rape. A year later, on the 14th of October, he was collected at Johannesburg Correctional Center by investigating officer Tuban and appeared in court for an escape that occurred in 2008. Like any other process, all the processes were followed, taken to court, and he was sentenced for 3 months for an escape charge. When he was brought back from medium. When he came back from court, he was not at medium A, where he was picked up as an ATD, awaiting trial detainee, at a mandatory detainee now. He was taken to medium B as a sentenced offender. So he changed his status from a remand detainee to a sentenced offender for an estate charge of 2008. When he did not present himself at medium A on the 14th of November, the head of center has a duty on a roll call to check where inmate is because he's not back. It's called no return from court. He called the investigating officer on the 15th, and the investigating officer told him that Mlungisini Charlie has been sentenced to 3 months for an escape charge, which we took him for. He's now at medium B. It was therefore the duty of the head of the center to compile all documentation with respect to this remandee in his case, who is now a sentenced offender, to pass the document to the head of the center of medium B. To say, much as this man is going to serve 3 months, there is a charge that is hanging on his head, which means you need to monitor this. We also want to correct the notion that he was erroneously released. It's not erroneously, he was released lawfully. The 3 months expired. I want you then to put into context what happened. The head of the center, who is duty bound to have done the documentation between the two centers, did not do his job. I can confirm here as a national commissioner, when this matter was brought to my attention on Friday at about 1300 hours by a journalist who said, "Are you aware that somebody has been released?" Elena said, "I don't know." There are so many people, if you could indicate as to who this individual is, where, I'll be able to come back to you to confirm or deny. That was a 702 journalist, Rahima Esau. I then called my regional commissioner, who was with me, and I called Mr. Modise, who also was not aware as to who we're talking about. Because Mlungisini Charlie can be any other person. We have 160,000 inmates, so we need to know where, who. The day elapsed, Chairperson, on the evening of that Friday, it came to pass in the news that the newspapers had the information correct that he was from Johannesburg Correctional Center. The regional commissioner, Mr. Mkwena, therefore put all systems in motion to verify as to whether indeed this has happened. On Saturday, the 3rd, we also put systems in place to bring all the officials to the center in order for us to understand what exactly happened. I can confirm through telephone communication between myself, my CDC, my RC, that we wanted to get this matter solved and investigated as quickly as possible. I even informed the Deputy Minister on Friday. Was it on Friday? Friday afternoon, after I was informed. It is important that we hear this so that we have a sense as to what happened and also the measures that were put in place. Every Saturday morning, the department was facing a number of deaths that occurred amongst our officials. We distributed ourselves to attend the brothers' funeral services. It is our duty as management to be compassionate to those who serve us and work with us. I went to Limpopo, the regional commissioner went to Limpopo to a different funeral of an officer who died in line of duty, and others went to Paris for an official who committed suicide. But be as it may, we attended this matter because we wanted to know exactly what happened. At 1500 hours, my RC, regional commissioner Mugwena, had assembled all his management team at Johannesburg Correctional Center. He wanted all the documents, he wanted all the information that is pertinent to this offender. At 1700 hours, he called me. I went myself to have
a discussion with the team. In short, the officer in charge for medium A indicated in my presence, in the presence of his officials, that he had not done his job. There was an allegation that the systems were down, and we interrogated this. If the systems were down for that particular day, they were not down for 3 months. Because it's easy to cast a suspicion and say IT is not working. In the document that we had, it was signed that IT was down from 7 and it was up at 9. We called the officer in charge of the admission and he said IT is confirmed that the system was down for 2 hours and therefore there were no reasons to say that he could not be picked up in the system. Because I did not want to influence the line of action, as the last arbiter in the process, I excused myself because I had a sense. That's what has happened. I have given an instruction that whoever is involved, if it was a commission of crime, dereliction of duty, gross negligence of the highest order, that the head must go. That is in my SMS communication of Saturday. I also want to report that I had a discussion with the ex-National Commission of SAPS on this matter. And also to indicate to him that the discussion that I had with him in confidence with respect to this particular center still remains. At 1800 hours, I spoke to the National Commissioner acting for SAPS that I have been on site. I know what is happening. I can formulate an opinion. But that I leave to the Regional Commissioner because I can't micromanage. I expect things to happen and I expect them to be done lawfully. The following day, on Sunday, at about 9 o'clock, the Regional Commissioner informed me. I was also in discussion with my CDC. Just to take you back, on Saturday, around 11 o'clock, we discussed this. But let's fast forward to Sunday morning at about 9 o'clock. I also had a discussion with the RC was going back to the center, Johannesburg Sun City. Wherein he had informed the head of legal services, Mr. Malati, that the process must be unfolded to suspend the officials with a view to take disciplinary measures conducive to this type of negligence. And indeed, at around 10 o'clock, I spoke to Lieutenant General Kwanazi, and he said, the fugitive has been arrested. But I want to put it on record here that on Saturday when I met with the team, the first question I asked, when you guys heard about this person because you know that he was here, what did you do? I know as correctional officials we have no right to arrest, but we can call upon institutions and colleagues in the security institutions to help us to go and trace the culprit. And it was silent, no response. And I said, if I were in your shoes, I would have activated our emergency support team to go and look and search for the men and addresses that we have at our disposal. Because when he was serving 3 months, he was visited. Therefore, we needed also to check the number of the people who were visiting. Possibly, he might be there. I don't need to come and give you a lecture on this. It's a simple, common sense, as a security institution, that things that you should have done. And they indicated to me that this man has two addresses, which I found very strange. One was addressed in KZN, and the other one was an address in South East, in Johannesburg. And I indicated the South East number was a dummy. Because when he came in, he had an address of KwaZulu-Natal. So the one in South East, I could not understand as to whom was it related to. But be as it may, these two addresses needed to have been searched on Saturday night. We'd have taken the accolades as a department if we had done that. If we had instituted the emergency intervention team to go and look for him in the addresses that we have, even if we had
collaborated with the bodies. We could have taken the responsibility ourselves. The bottom line is, this is gross negligence of the highest order. But what compounds this problem is that the officer in charge says, because it was a lower case court, we just put the case in a pigeonhole. Which means, on record, we might have a number of people who have been released on the same process, because we tend to give courts a certain status, certain courts we don't take much attention to. This is gross negligence of higher order, dereliction of duty, and of course failure to comply with the basic principles of the standard operating procedures. As we speak, charges are formulated, and I want to put it here on record that we could not suspend it immediately because we would not be following the law. If it was in the past, whatever, where there are no laws, I could have said you are fired immediately, but then it would come to bite me. So the legal process has been followed. From where I'm sitting, the man is going to be suspended, and we know the culprit. There are two people involved in this. In short, chairperson and members of the portfolio committee, there was no escape. The man left, released accordingly, and the official did not do what was supposed to have been done. I'm not sure whether I've responded to the question because the briefing, all the other processes I can only respond to because we had a working day which was yesterday. It's contemplation of suspension and the legal things, and we are unlike other institutions where you're fired on the spot. So we need to follow the process. But I can assure you, it's a matter that we did not leave to lie by the wayside and lament and wait. I was personally involved, my CDC was involved, the RC was involved, Deputy Minister was informed, and we have our tax dinner. We shall, when the documents have been given, announce to the people of South Africa and the public in general as to what we have done. But for the moment, allow me the space to get all the documents in place, not to preempt something that I have not got the documents signed. We are here, we left last night, and therefore the processes were being followed in the manner that. That's my short briefing chapter. Something that I would not have liked to have spoken about, something that is a lump, but it confirms one particular phenomenon in the whole value chain. That public perception sees correctional services as the weakest link, and failure to comply and provide peace of mind to the public of South Africa. It's a huge and tall order that we have to deal with, but whatever we have within our power to create a situation wherein officials comply, we shall do so. But we shall also do so with the support that we get from yourselves, with understanding that we deal with a department that has long-rooted roots of problems that are within the organization. We're not accepting that as a defeat, not a defeatist approach, but this management team, as you would accept, Chairperson, we do everything possible to clean our organization of corrupt officials, officials who are not doing their work. This time around, I take full responsibility for this matter. I want this matter dealt with accordingly. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Commissioner. You see, it is important for us to raise this matter. At the time that you were doing whatever you were doing, Commissioner, I was getting a call from the highest authorities in Gauteng government about this matter. And I had no answer for that. I couldn't answer the NEC for safety and security at 12 o'clock on Friday night. The Premier of Gauteng was on top of the NEC, saying you and your people have failed. The NEC phones me and says, Chief, it's not me and my people that have failed, it's correctional services from which this person has walked out. And I need to be in a position to say we are on top of it and give you the necessary support, Commissioner. But we need to give the necessary support after we've had this type of a discussion where we all understand and are able to contextualize it, because we all get caught. We all get calls when people are worried, especially around matters of security. And you will appreciate that when it comes to whether it's perception or reality, that there's a serial racist walking around in South Africa, you will expect a backlash. You will expect a backlash. And that is why it was important for me, without even warning you, to demand that we get some sort of explanation from correctional services, so that I'm able to go to Premier this evening and say, look, I saw them, as I promised you, I had a discussion with them, and this is how I understand it. So I'm sorry that I ambushed you, but we had to do it. And maybe it must be a lesson to everybody else in this department that we are serious about our job. This committee is serious about its job. Let us then, we'll allow you to, I needed to respond to those introductory remarks that I made about our dissatisfaction with how this department is treating the portfolio committee and by extension Parliament. And then we will allow the CFO to do his thing, and we'll open it up for discussion. Because we have spent almost 45 minutes on a matter that was important to me, CFO, you're going to have to do your stuff with a little bit shorter time when you do get there. But Commissioner, I made some remarks that I made for the record because we are very distressed about what's happening, certainly last week's offense. I'm not sure if you want to comment on that.
Thank you, Chair. I have noted the comments that you made with respect to last week's presentation and the delegation. Certainly, this committee can attest and confirm that I don't feel any embarrassment if I follow to the court. Contrary to that, I accept that as a learning curve, and it also enriches us to take corrective measures on things that we might not have done correctly. Certainly, at no point have I given anything to this committee to the best of my ability. And therefore, I expect my team to do the same. A culture where we speak straight, where we have faltered, we accept, and we go back and regroup and provide the responses that are necessary. It is lamentable, Chair, but we would like to assure you that we will do everything possible to create an environment wherein we don't speak about before my time. But there will be instances wherein we refer this not as a measure to cover up, but also to contextualize the situation in which we're doing that presentation. We are grateful of the fact that we openly talk about the challenges that we have. Certainly the team that I lead here today will do so. But before we do a presentation, I want to make an apology. Ms. Reiner is not here with her team. I also want to make one or two announcements that we do have a new CDC for Government Information and Technology, IT. Ms. Ntabiseng Masupia, she's sitting right at the end. I did intimate to yourself that the whole complement of the team is here. On the 16th of February, we also have a Chief Audit Executive joining us, Mr. Vogani Lamin, who's sitting at the back here. So that we know who are the people who have joined us to swell the ranks to make a change in this organization. Time will tell, but we believe that we have appointed the right individuals, not to a post, but to the organization. On that note, Chair, thank you very much. Certainly, the issue is something that I would have liked to communicate to yourself, as I've done in the past. But because there were legal issues that we needed to follow, I needed to have my ducks in a row. If in that process I failed to inform the portfolio committee, I want to tender my sincere apology, because we wanted to have everything done in the manner so that when we give you a report, it's a report that is well consolidated. My sincere apology, Chair.
Thank you very much, CFO. I'm not sure, I'm assuming that you're going to lead the discussion, I don't know. We are here to receive a report on the operations of correctional services for the quarter ending December. That is financial and other. So So I'm not sure how you guys have planned it, but we'd want to receive some report. Otherwise, if not, we have the documents. We can get straight into discussions if you choose to do it that way. We have sufficient documents, I think, to get straight into discussions if you want to, but it's up to you. National Treasury is here. They'll be able to attest to some of the stuff. AG is here. He'll be able to attest to some of the stuff because we have source documents from them as well. And so it's really up to you guys. You have an opportunity to do a presentation, otherwise you get into discussion. Commissioner.
Chairperson, thank you. We'll gift Ms. Maleka to give you the financial head up.
Thank you, Commissioner, Honourable Chair members. We'll do the financial presentation for the quarter ending 31st December 2011. This is the third quarter. Against a revised allocation of 16.7 billion, at the end of the third quarter, we have spent 11.4 billion, which constitutes 68.61% of the total adjusted appropriation. We'll then move to the slide that summarizes the program. That's why. Thank you. As at the end of the third quarter, Chairperson, we had explained that we have spent 74.5% of the allocation, but we actually spent 68.6%, which then translated into understanding in view of what we explained as at the end of the third quarter. With regards to the different programs, in terms of program administration, we actually spent 73.5% of the allocation for that particular program against the blend of 68.3%. And the reason for us to go over our blend was because the Department of Public Works submitted prior to our anticipated month for actually paying the lease commitment for their residences, for our officials, and also for their offices and municipal services. So normally that would have gone in the fourth quarter in terms of our plan, but we received the billing around December. As we received the billing after checking it, we were satisfied that the money is actually payable to them and we process that. And I'll be asking the plan that we'll process the payment around January. That then contributed to that program spending more than the anticipated amount. For program security, we actually spent less than what we had anticipated. We had anticipated we'd spend about 4.1 billion. We actually spent about 3.9 billion. And mainly, at the end of the third quarter, we still had the pay progressions that we had to pay to the majority of officials, because the majority of the workforce is actually under program security. That was not yet processed by the third quarter. The actual spending happened in the month of January, a greater part of that. For program corrections, we actually went beyond what we had planned to spend. Basically, also in terms of program corrections, we had an increase in terms of the number of posts that we were filling for the third quarter as anticipated. Program care, we spent less than what we had anticipated to spend, mainly in terms of also the pay progression is going to be very common in most programs. This represents pay progression for our officials in terms of the different OSDs. We no longer pay progression on an annual basis, they are paid on every second year. So the year after 2011-12, you won't see that as the main reason, but you just see the normal inflation adjustment of salaries but on year two, then it will be the normal inflation plus the pay progression in line with the actual performance of officials as assessed and moderated by the different committees. But again, we had a decrease in terms of spending for goods and services under care, because in terms of what the program consumed with regard to store items and what we actually went through our books, the clearance of those items were not finalized by the third quarter. Program development, then it's program care, the representative progression not affected by end of the third quarter, affected in the fourth quarter, and also in terms of goods and services, we went below what we had anticipated in terms of the workshop and agricultural materials that we use for the rehabilitation of offenders and also for some of the centers for the self-sufficiency in terms of the ratios of offenders. Program social reintegration, again, it's in terms of workforce, the second biggest program, that's where our community officers are. The 3% pay progression made a significant impact in terms of the under expenditure, which will improve slightly in fourth quarter, and also goods and services. We had some GG clearances that were not finalized by the end of the third quarter, that's still to the fourth quarter. Program facilities, it is kind of worth performing in terms of the percentage, as you can see, the chairperson. Those we anticipated that we spend about 75% of the total revised allocation, we actually spend 56%. And then the main contributing factor, it is the exclusively appropriated money for the public program. We still have projects that are not according to what was initially given to us. In line with the spending plan that we received from the Department of Public Works, there has been a lot of write-ups between the relevant program manager and also the Department of Public Works. We had requested them before to actually give us a reviewed cash flow projection so that we can therefore engage National Treasury and submit that. And all those attempts were not fruitful, so that we can therefore revise that. Instead of us continuing to say we plan to spend quite a lot and actually at the end of each month spend far lesser than what we anticipated. So, but the reality is we're sitting in the fourth quarter is that it's one of the programs that we're projecting that is going to again grossly underspend its revised allocation. And in terms of the economic classification, compensation of employees, we had planned that by end of third quarter we spent about 77% of the revised allocation. We spent 70% of that. I must take a pause here, Chairperson, indicated and recall that we did appear before the Standing Committee on Public Accounts sometime in August, and the Standing Committee tabled before the National Assembly its recommendation on the 2008-2009 annualized expenditure of $483 million, which was indicating after we had a discussion with National Treasury that the $483 million that we overspent in 2008-09 that is still appearing in our books. The recommendation was that the money should be approved but financed from DCS projected under expenditure. So we had provided revised projections to National Treasury saying that 11-12, yes, we are projecting actually that we underspend, and therefore for us as a department it would be better that the money is taken off in 11-12, and that's our plea in terms of the report that we wrote to Treasury sometime this year, and that Treasury intend tabled before SCOPA, that if all goes well, the parliamentary processes that if the money can then be approved so that we can therefore generalize it in the 11-12 financial year. In our own projections, when you look in the next MTF, we said that it would severely impact or core projects in terms of service delivery. So that has been our right to SCOPA and also to National Treasury, so that has gone through. We are also aware that the Minister of Finance did table it as part of the finance bill, but we are solely dependent on the parliamentary processes. But still, our plan is that it should be allocated, actually affected in terms of its final approval this financial year. Failure, which we have then to continue to engage National Treasury in terms of how then do we kind of look at processing it in the next financial year without severely impacting on the future MTF allocations and the service delivery of key core projects. Under goods and services, that indicated that we have overspent, and mainly it is because of the payment process, because of getting the bills earlier than we anticipated.
must indicate that in terms of the municipal services, the listed four offices and residences, official residences, plus the other parts that are current from public works, we do get the bills year on year. We normally always spend 99%, almost 100% of that allocation. Our major hiccup with public works is the infrastructure part, which is the capital works program. That's where the bills don't come as anticipated. And that's where, again, the spending plan, the cash flow projections have challenges. We've had several intervention meetings to say, you don't take the allocation and divide by 12 when you project for infrastructure spending. You need to factor all the knowns that are there in the industry so that you've got credible expenditure at the end of the day, but it's something that we're not totally in control of. Transfers and subsidies, we spend much more than we anticipated. Again, here, it's a little bit difficult to project accurately because members can enter and predict the death cases and resignation cases. We normally use patterns. The ones that we can predict safely are the normal retirement of officials. So at times we've got more deaths than anticipated. We spend put our orderly reporting off target. So in this case, we had quite a number of those unpredictable cases with regard to leave gratuities of members. In terms of payment for capital access, that's the area that I have indicated, we anticipated that we will spend about 74% of the revised appropriation. We actually spent about 45%. So that's one area that at the end of the financial year, indeed, to be realistic and should only to the committee, we're not going to perform to what we documented before. The other slides, Chairperson, are indicating what I've indicated in number. I'm not going to go to that. I'll then hand over to Commissioner.
Chair, that was a high level presentation on the financial performance. Will be guided by yourself as to whether you want to go through the questions and then we go on the performance information, which is separately going to be done by CDC Moody's.
Let's deal with the and finish the financials. Do members want to engage with the presentation? Mr. Sell, followed by Mam Gwenya, followed by Advocate Mac. Mr. Sell.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the department. I have some concerns around the exactly what is meant by some words. So when I read here under program care, the presentation says, as well as goods and services due to the low movement of stored items broadly as a result the slow clearance of internal charges in line with the request and consumption of items. Doesn't actually make sense to me as an English speaker. So I would really like, in simple language, to know what caused the variation, what was the exact problem, and more importantly, what's being done to fix it. Then, under the compensation of the employees, we had a presentation last week in which a number of issues were raised around the OSD and the slow rate of rollout and the fact that classes of employees were not yet being dealt with in terms of OSD, but it does not seem to be a feature of this particular presentation. My final question really relates in broad terms to the spending pattern. And you will recollect, Chair, that we have been very critical in the past of the division within the department of budget allocation because we don't think necessarily that it always reflects the priorities that flow from the white paper. And in specific, we believe that there is proportionately too little money spent on care, development, and social reintegration as opposed, for example, to security and administration. Now, if you look at this spending pattern,
not only is the actual growth allocation that much lower or disproportionate in line with that orientation, but the spending within those programs is the lowest. And that is, I think, a little troublesome in terms of... the point I'm making is that not only aren't we allocating enough to development care and social reintegration, but we're also underspending there at the highest. I'll stop there.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the estimation for goods and services for care, what happens is that if you look at program administration, it's something that we have been kind of to the party trying to explain over a number of years. If you recall some years ago, as a department, we used to have a service program that was called internal targets. We have an internal target concept in the department, unfortunately, with the number of stores that we're keeping. So what happens is that the store, so we did away with that and made further but in our books, it's still there. It's not there. You won't see it physically in the E&D that says international needs to have it, which used to be in a negative, not necessarily a positive allocation, in a negative. So what happens is we are buying for the major stores. So we buy in inflation, be it food, be it health items, hygienic items, to keep it in store. So as and when the units are requisitioning from stores for the actual consumption, that's where they will debit the relevant program. Relevant program in this instance, the major part in care, and the same concept applies to development as well. When it comes to agricultural or workshop materials, we buy in bulk, we put that in major stores. As and when the material is being requisitioned to workshops, we then move it from stores. So in other words, you credit stores, and then you go and debit, if I can use those classical bookkeeping terms, debit and credit, you will then, or that's now actual consumption, you will then go and debit either development or care program. So effectively, the concept is actually saying that as much as it's bought in huge stores or keeping stock, at the end of the day, we cannot claim that that is actual expenditure of offender rations or offender hygienic items up until offenders actually use those items. That's where they will indicate that there's actual allocation that has been spent, if I can put it like that, as much as important to. Hence, you'll see also at the end of the financial day, if you look at your financial statements, will then indicate the stock items still available. And in terms of the stock items still available, we categorize this is rations, this is hygienic items, provision stock, and all of that. And the responsibility is, in terms of accountability, would not necessarily be that of the care program manager or development program manager. It remains the responsibility of ultimately CFO, which is the one that manages stores. So that's the whole concept. So what happens is that on paper, you would have, for example, the kitchens requisitioning a ration from the store to actually utilize in cooking for the offenders. So the store items have gone, the food, the raisins and everything as the flour has gone to the kitchen. But now what you need again is some paperwork. Store would then say, I've given to care in the kitchen. But what happens is that care then must clear that item, that this item has actually now been used by me as a program manager for care, for full accountability. So at the end of the financial year, we are able to report to the public how much did it cost us to actually provide food provisioning to inmates, how much did it actually cost us. Not to count the stock items, but to count the actual consumption. So that's the bookkeeping part that most of the time doesn't happen during the month that the requisitions have flowed to the either to workshop or either to the kitchen or to the other small store items within the facilities. So basically that is that. What we have then is a clearance in area. Because you must first requisition, utilize them clear in terms of the book. We normally have two. And that has been exacerbated again by the fact that the officials that used to do this with the implementation of the OSDs, most of them to actually use logistics and be part of your center-based officials. So So we normally then have some time-length issues that we experience in terms of the clearance. So food or two items that move to the relevant program, but the bookkeeping part is in arrears. Whatever you consume in March will be cleared in arrears. What we have in the system, we normally have about 10 days that allows us to actually clear the previous month. But in here, we always express that problem that people don't utilize that opening to fast track the process of clearance. But it doesn't mean the item is not utilized by the relevant two programs, maybe development and those two programs. In terms of compensation of employees, all OSGs have been implemented in the department, the ones that are relevant to the Department of Correctional Services, the major ones being the OSG for correctional officials, which had two phases. Phase one, which was a once-off payment and adjustment in notches, and phase two, which was a recognition of experience, phase two being implemented in April, May 2010. So we do not have outstanding OSD. The only OSD that is still en route was the OSD for the health environment specialist, and we've got only two of them, but that is en route. We go to do the one-off payment for them, and the notch adjustment for those two officials. They have been audited, I've seen the figures themselves, that is en route to CFO and commission. Those are the only ones that have left behind. But in terms of educators, in terms of psychologists, social workers, the past instructional officials, we have implemented those policies and reported according to the two mother departments, being National Treasury and the Department of Public Services and Administration. In terms of the spending patterns, your observation and status is correct. It doesn't seem that we're advocating enough in those programs again, but year on year, if you take our trends, it's not big as 5 or more years, you'll see that those are the two programs that sometimes don't spend what is originally allocated to them. And sometimes in there, they even declare that they've got too much money and then request for that money be shifted away. Again, that's one part that we always say it kind of need to marry the two. Priority, like the management department and capacity to spend. But you can easily say and be emotional and say, let's allocate 20% of the total allocation to those two programs. But if there is no capacity to spend the allocation, again, the money is lying there not to spend. So we do have a challenge in terms of the spending capacity, and that is also exacerbated that, in, again, those two programs where critical skills and scarce skills are lying. That sometimes as much as we've got allocations, but we need to be realistic, we've got high vacancies there. If we talk allocation for psychologists, if we talk allocations for social workers, and so forth, we can't pump money where there are no people to spend the money. So, and development, again, artisans, high vacancy levels, we can't pump money when there won't be hands to spend that money. But I fully agree with you. It is those two programs are part of our core programs in terms of rehabilitation and also care for offenders. But we need to always balance the two to ensure that we've got capacity to spend the money, that whatever is allocated at the end of the day, we are able to effectively spend the money that has been allocated. And so far, because of the high vacancy levels, we're not able to make the break. Even if originally what is appropriated is X amount, but if you just get the sense in the end, you will also see that we're not making the grade in terms of spending what has been originally allocated. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the presentation from the GCA states that amongst other understanding is as a result of vacancy in the process of being filled and 3% pay progression estimate from July. My question, Chair, why and how did they arrive at 3%? Again, Chair, there's also an overspending by 120.4% under household against a project spending plan of 42.4
5%. What leads to overspending under these items? That's the two questions that I ask at the system.
Yes. Yeah, Advocate, mine is similar.
Can I just add the same response? Thanks. With regard to program administration, security, program security, program care, development, it also mentioned about advertised posts as a result of the underspending. It would be unfair to ask you when are you going to finalize these things, because people come and go, you know, on a continuous basis. But when would you be able really to address the critical issues of this advertising report? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of what Magwenya asked of the 3%, it was, the 3% was negotiated between the employer and the organized labor when government negotiated for the OECD, specifically for the majority of our officials. So if you look at the OECD resolution, it does indicate that normally what you had in public service before OECD was that annually you would have the normal inflation adjustment over and above that, given the good performance of individual officials, you would then have what we call a 1% pay progression. So in other words, government says, if you work up to this level, I want to compensate you for the good work that you've done, 1%. And if you go overboard, then you get a once-off bonus in line with your notch. So when they moved to the different dispensations, in terms of the occupation-specific dispensations, instead of what you are now paying once every 2 years, then the negotiated settlement was that instead of 1% every year for good performance, let's have 3% every 2 years. So that's our thing, that what we have now in 11, 12 is we're paying the 3%, but when we come to you in 2012, 13, for the majority of our officials, which is the security officials and correctional officials, you won't see the any percentage change for good performance, you'll only see the normal inflation adjustment. Then we skip a year after, we come again and pay them. But now, because these OECDs were implemented, not all of them at once, like the nurses, they also progress in terms of the pay progression every 2 years, but their 2 years expire different from the one of security officials. So in 1 year, we pay a little bit of the pay progression, maybe to nurses, to social workers, and the different occupations, but for us, because the majority of our officials are security officials and correctional officials, then you will see that the bigger impact when you pay them. So for 11, 12, you are paying, 12, 13, you are paying, 14, 13, 14, you are paying. So that's a negotiated settlement that all of us are concerned that what we want to pay. In terms of what leads to the over expenditure on transfers and subsidies, I've tried to explain that what happens is that for that item, we use it to pay for when members either leave the employment through normal retirement, through early retirement, when they resign, or when they pass on. So that's a kind of a package of benefits that we give you for the gratuity, because pension is paid by Pensions Administration. So we normally budget that. So what happens is that we can easily predict that so many, by age, so many officials are going to reach age of 60, because that's a normal retirement age for those that are public service at age 65. That we can easily predict. Early retirement 65 years, we can kind of use trends and say in the past there are so many applications, so we can predict that so many out of the age 55 are going to request early retirement. But our dilemma is the category of resignations and also the death cases. Those we normally use past trends to predict. But we find that sometimes maybe in the last financial year, by third quarter, probably only you might find that only maybe 100 officials die, for example. But in this year, you find that more pass on. And therefore, because people have passed on, you can't say, you know, we wait for the fourth quarter before I pay. Even if money is kind of not available, we have to reprioritize the accounting officer to actually make money available to pay those.
beneficiaries, be it the surviving spouses or whoever that is entitled to those money, the amount of money. So basically what led in this particular third quarter in over expenditure, from what we explained, are those categories. The ones of inmate gratuity that you can easily predict, so that's not the main cause of us going over. It is mainly the members gratuities that we thought maybe so many given past friends are going to leave the system and find that a higher number actually leave the system, whether they resign or whether they pass on duty, then we have to pay them that amount of money. In terms of the questions asked by advocates, the advertised posts and all of that, I must indicate that we are monitoring ourselves as a department in terms of the posts that we are advertising and also our recruitment strategy. Again, it's one of those that you are feeling people are leaving, and sometimes even before you feel people actually leave you, as you try to say, come for an interview, someone says, I'm no longer interested, I've already got a post in another department. So we forever are kind of in competition with each other as government department, because if we do a broader analysis, we kind of sometimes are cycling amongst ourselves. Someone, I would leave correctional service to go to health, and someone from health to go to social development and so forth. So there are certain categories of officials that you would find that our turnover probably is higher than our turn, probably normal, especially the critical skills like your information technology, auditors, finance. But again, I must also admit, Chairperson, that we're not having a good turnaround time between the time of advertising a post and the actual filling of post. So that's another part that needs a lot of improvement within the department. But if you can also at our ATP, we've lifted it to a strategic level so that we can be able to better monitor ourselves. But we have not reached a stage where we can safely say that our turnaround between actual vacancy address, that's another gap. When someone leaves a post to when we actually advertise, there's a huge turnaround that we need to deal with. Again, we now have advertised to actually filling the post. We still have a turnaround that is not at the level that is a department we can be proud of. But it's an issue that it is not, but still a challenge.
Thank you. Let me I allow the members to pose theirs. Let me pose my one. Ma'am, you said to us that transfers and subsidies. Let me ask you the question differently. You've got all these programs, admin, care, all those things. Facilities. What is facilities?
Thank you, Chairperson. Facilities is a program. Houses. Indicated, yeah, it is basic infrastructure in terms of the new infrastructure, in other words, you are constructing a new facility, or it's major rehabilitation of an existing infrastructure, and the triple P's, the two current existing triple P's, the allocations are under that particular.
Thank you very much. What is subsidies and transfers? You said it's mainly to do with gratuities and so on.
Gratuities to offenders and members, plus also the transfer payment that we pay to SASSETA in terms of the Youth Development Act, the 1% of the
All right. Having said that, I don't understand. I don't understand if that's what facilities in the main are about, that we then budget for transfer facilities 2 billion rand. In facilities, you budget 2 billion rand for this thing that you're talking about. And then if you go to any of the other ones, care, you only budget 500,000. Development, you budget 114. Integration, you budget 729. This I'm picking up from National Treasury. And National Treasury, you're going to have to back me up, because I'm picking up these things from your document. Now, listen to what you were saying with Marika. You were saying subsidies and transfers
in the main have to do with gratuities and people expiring. You're saying to me that facilities in the main have to do with brick and mortar. And yet, you budget 2196 under subsidies and transfers in that program. And in the programs where there are people, you budget less. Can you explain that to me? I don't understand it. This is what I've picked up from National Treasury. I want to repeat, you are saying subsidies and transfers have to do with people, gratuities, resigning and so on. That's what you're saying to me. Facilities, you're saying to me, are the brick and mortar, so there wouldn't be enough, I mean, a lot of people. Yeah. Why then are you budgeting in that program so much for people resigning and whatever, and not where the people are? Because that is according to what I picked up on National Treasury. Can you explain that?
Thank you, Chairperson. I may not be privy to the report that you're referring to by National Treasury, but from what was tabled in Parliament in terms of our own estimate of national expenditure, our transfers and subsidies to program facilities is about 1.8 million. The greater portion is payments for capital assets, buildings and other structures, which is over a billion. So I'm not speaking that they might be able to explain, but from our own records, it's a very small program in terms of the number of people, and proportionately, the number of transfers and subsidies is minimal, it's negligible from our own, relative to the allocation of the department. Thank you.
That's why we have you here. You see, your report that you sent to me, National Treasury, under facilities, on page 12, you've got transfer and subsidies, current budget, 2196. Are you with me?
That's correct.
2196, as opposed to 700,000 or 100,000 somewhere else. The individual from Correctional Services says to me, she's not disputing it, but she probably doesn't know. I want members from the Portfolio Committee to listen to what I'm saying. Treasury has a budget, or a report that they give me, that says this department has budgeted for early retirement, death and so on, so much money to a facility or a program that deals with bricks and mortar. I want Treasury maybe to... Is this report of yours accurate, Treasury?
It's very accurate.
Please explain it so that Ms. Mareka can understand.
We draw our data directly from the Wool and Leather Management Information System, which basically takes data from the BAS system as inputted by the department, and that is what we use in the report to do the analysis. This quarterly report you have is also sent to the Commissioner about approximately a month after each quarter, so they definitely do have the numbers. This is what we have on the Wool and Leather system.
Mareka, I want you to come back to us in reasonable time and explain that phenomenon. All right? We're not going to dispute it. It's fine. You share it with them.
Yes.
You can share it with them. But I want you guys to explain this thing to me. I'll come to you. That's why I asked who's going to present this report. You gave it to Ms. Mareka. You'll defend her later on. So you'll come and you'll explain that to us, Ms. Mareka. How do we budget in a place that doesn't have human beings so much money for leave and gratuities and so on? And you come here to the quarterly report and you're not aware of that budgeting amount. The second one that I'd want to raise with you then just bring it to your attention. Last week we met with your colleagues, and I'm raising the ones, I'm only touching on what members have touched, and we were talking about OSDs and all those things. And we got a very scary report that if you lose an arbitrary or a something, whatever, you, arbitration, if you lose it, you have a contingent liability for overtime of, I think, R1 billion or R3 billion. I don't know if you're aware of it. That is what was reported to us last week, that you have this hanging over your head. I want to know from you guys, are you aware of it, number one? And number two, what are you doing about it in the eventuality that the worst happens? Unless you're saying that you are very confident it's not going to happen. But if the worst happens, where are you going to find that R1 billion? Because organized labor are very confident. In fact, they said to us last week they've won most of the cases that they take as arbitration. So they don't understand why you are still. In fact, their words were, you shouldn't be taking this one and, I don't know what you're calling it, disputing it or doing whatever the case might be. You shouldn't be challenging it. That's what they were saying to us. But our understanding is that you probably stand, I think it's 1 billion rand or 3 billion rand, I speak under correction, for overtime if you lose that one. So that you must just report to me this one. But let me get to what I wanted to ask. Could I have an understanding what is it that you categorize as household? Household. In these documents. What is household? Just very broadly.
Thank you, Chairperson. Household will encompass the members themselves and also in this instance the inmates. But when you transfer, for example, to municipalities and whatever, you've got a separate category and you transfer the sitters, you put them as a transfer to entity. But in terms of, in this case, transfer to households, it is the main two components in this case will be the members and also the inmates.
I'm asking this question because I have a document, again, National Treasury. Let me refer you, and Commissioner, maybe feels this document has been sent to you. Maybe you must make notes so that you understand how my mind works going forward. Let Treasury take you to the spending on care on page 8. We have transfer and subsidies. We budget 583. You with me? We've got households. Budget 583. Actual spending, transfer and subsidies, 1258. Actual spending, households, 1258. I asked the question, what is household? What is transfer and subsidies? And I got an explanation. In this report, under care, your budget for these two items are exactly the same to the last letter. Your spending exactly the same to the last letter. This is care. You go to development. Your budget exactly the same to the last letter. Your spending exactly the same to the last letter. I'm talking about household and subsidies. You go to reintegration. You budget exactly the same for both of them, exactly the same to the last thing. You spend exactly the same to the last thing for both of them. This is according to National Treasury's report that they've given to me. You go to facilities. You budget exactly the same. You spend exactly the same. I'm talking about the document. I want somebody to explain this thing to me because it doesn't seem correct to me. Could you explain it?
Thank you, Chairperson. Transfers and subsidies as an economic classification would be at the same level, put simply, as of, for example, your current payments or payment for capital assets. Let's take current payments. I'll come to transfers and subsidies. Current payments is an economic classification, but under current payments, for example, as a main component of compensation with employees and also goods and services, which mainly would then form part of your current payments, because that's current, that's operational. You know, payments for capital assets, for example, you tell your buildings and other structures, and then there's the machinery and equipment, in this case, making the main sub component, if I can put it like that. The payment for capital assets is the main economic classification. But coming to transfers and subsidies, so your main equivalent to current payments, equivalent to payment for capital assets would be transfers and payments, transfers and subsidies. And your transfers to households becomes then a sub-component, like your compensation of employees, like your goods and services. That's where, for example, if you look at other programs, that's where maybe we have a transfer to provinces and municipalities. Those would be the programs that pay maybe the licenses for the licensing of our government there. So other programs would not have that, so they don't keep quite a lot of fleet, but other programs have the two sub-components, which is your households, your gratuities to members and gratuities to inmates, and And it's not saying, it says that this is to provinces and municipalities, the king independent municipalities for the
elections. But actually, this was, because I don't get into a fight, I was trying to understand it. So these figures that are being presented by Treasury, are they actual or are they just book entries? You know, what I'm saying is, you cannot have exactly the same to the last rand on those two items. It's just not possible. So I'm saying it's either a book entry. In other words, if there's 10 rand in the budget, we will allocate 10 rand as actual, as opposed to the actual amount that it is. That's what I'm trying to understand. Because on all these things that I'm talking about, whatever you budgeted for, on the one, you budgeted for on the other. And you spent it on the one and you spent it on the other. The simple question, are these book entries or are these actual that are happening in these that are just related?
Thank you, Chairperson. Those are actual, as I'm saying, the other is a sub-component of. So if you've got one subset of a whole, so the whole is actually the total subset in this case. But if, for example, you had two sub-components of that main component of transfers and subsidies, then we have to add the two amounts. That's why in all programs, you've got only transfers that are making to households, therefore your actual of households. So it's 0+1 is equal to 1, so the main component consists of only one sub-component for that particular sub-program. So it is accurate, those are accurate figures that they draw from our own financial system, so we are not disputing the figures at this stage.
Okay. I'm going to make an appointment, Cindy, with National Treasury in yourself. I'm still failing to understand. Maybe you want to explore National Treasury. That, do you understand my difficulty? Household subsidies in these three areas, it's exactly the same. Let's forget about the budget, because the budget is something that we can all put it. But when we talk about the actual, it's exactly the same. In care, it's the same amount. In reintegration, it's the same amount. I am saying to you that I find it extremely difficult that you could have two line items with exactly the same amount across the board. This is not a coincidence. This is a trend that I'm seeing here. So maybe you can explain it to me. If it's not easy, Cindy's going to organize a meeting where you guys come and sit in my office so that I understand. If it means we must go through each line that makes up the 258, we will do that. Maybe you want to explain to me, sir.
Like I said, the data we see on the Bulandela Management Information System, which draws directly as it was inputted on that, we picked up on the same issue and also told the department, in every quarterly report, please, we think you are under budgeting on this item. And then they will respond by saying that, look, it's impossible really for them to by now know exactly how much to provide on a certain item or to budget for it. And I guess then they focus on the history, like they said, but we do also feel that there is a bit of under-provision on it. It is also very strange that the numbers are exactly the same. But we can certainly sit down with you and maybe interrogate further.
Okay, you find the numbers very strange, but Moreka seems to think they're correct. This committee wants you guys to give us the exact. We want somebody to come and sit with us, and if it means you must do a Excel spreadsheet that says 5 rand, 10 rand, 15 rand, 30 rand, adds up to 268 rand for household, blah, 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 adds up to 268 for subsidies, then I need that. Because this doesn't sound right to me. But let's not interrogate that one further. You'll respond. You'll have an opportunity, both of you, to respond at a later stage. The other issue that I wanted to raise, Ms. Moreka, was if you go to facilities, and I'm looking at the document that Treasury provides me in preparation for this meeting. You know, under facilities, we have facility planning, and I'm assuming that facility planning is the fundraising door buildings and all those type of things. That's what I'm assuming facility planning is. You budgeted 972 million rand. You've only spent 369 million rand. Part of our last oversight, we've been complaining that Patrainsdorf takes forever to build, Brandplay takes forever to build, all these things are taking forever to build, and there's no people in there. The money is there. We don't have people in there. Overcrowding is not being addressed. And we have a continuous pattern of developers taking 366 days overtime. And when we ask the commissioner, why is that? They say, yes. No, just because of builders leave and because of inclement weather. You know, this is a symptom to us that somebody is not doing whatever they're doing correctly. We give you this money. CFO, we will take this money and we'll give this money to education tomorrow. We will take this money and give it to somebody else. We can't sit with a billion rand. No prisons we built or taking a year to be finalized. People are not going into there inspecting that. Nobody going into there. And we've got this type of money. So can somebody explain to us, in the third quarter, you've only spent 300 of almost a billion rand. And we know that Andreasdorp is still behind. We know that Randplay is behind. We know that Zurich is behind. Because we come from there last week or 2 weeks ago. Can somebody explain that to us, please, Commissioner?
Chairperson, we take the flag, but in the meeting that we had with you the other day in the presence of public works, we don't want to cast this aspersion. We have a serious problem with public works. And we request your indulgence in this matter to unlock this problem. It is not doing us any good because the issue that you're raising of overcrowding and facilities that are not occupied precisely because of the lack of time that it takes to complete a facility. Much as we put blame on public works, I would say 90% of this, the other blame, 10%, should come to us. We need to create what you call a project management team within our own institution. So as the contracts that we sign, we can follow and we can implement the penalties consequent to that. But the whole capital project that we have, public works is the biggest constraint. And we cannot plan around their schedules. We plan that this facility will be ready by year X, but you'd recall when they came here, they said they do geophysics, and then they come and discover the soil is contaminated, and they can't do it. Those are things that are within, not within our competence. I'd like also on this occasion to take this opportunity to raise one concern that we have publicly made to yourself. That is, Correctional Services is not going to move out of its current facility HQ. As we are not going to move our new from HQ to a new facility. We made that commitment in November 2012. That is not going to happen. I have countless correspondence. That is not happening. Last year, when they were supposed to go on tender, they cancelled everything without even telling us. So, we have communication to this matter. We have escalated the matter to the minister. So, these are the issues that have been raised there by the Deputy Minister of Correctional Services when he said public works is in ICU. Whether it's in ICU is a different matter. But the fact of the matter is that the dependency that we have with the sister department is a constraint for us. So, all the costs that we speak about, the escalation, the Kimberley escalation, it was 360, it went to a billion. Yes, we take the flag, we take the criticism, but I should think that we need to take a pause at one point or the other and say, is this how things are going to happen? We have currently embarked to use an independent organization within government, IDC, to do the fencing of 23 facilities. Because we saw that will be underspent with a huge amount of money. So the strategy that we're starting to think within the organization is that we should not confine ourselves to GPW only. We're thinking outside the box, and we've made a conscious decision that where it matters, we shall go and look for other competent organizations to help us spend appropriately. So I understand the difficulty that we have, but we also have a difficult way in. There is a huge dependence that we have, which is public works. Chairperson, we can flock this horse, but to a point wherein we are unable to move, we would request your indulgence to unlock this particular problem. Facilities is a big problem. Last year we underspent by 720 million on this project. This time around it's going to be lower because we sought to look for other avenues, signing MOUs with Independent Development Trust to deal with the issues on capital projects. So we are using that facility, but on some of these things our hands are tied. So we request your indulgence to help us with the public works, their portfolio, so that we can have some sort of timeline that are agreed upon. I must say that I needed to say this publicly in this meeting, that by any chance that you discover that we said we're going to new head office, it's not happening. I said it here. We have engaged with public works on the 3rd of February with the acting DC, and we have not moved. So these are the problems that we have. So there are things that we cannot do ourselves. But where there is a need for us to take other means, we certainly will do that. Thanks.
Arising out of the National Commissioner's response, I mean, I have a lot of sympathy, and I think DPW is in ICU, probably stay there for a very long time, might not come out. But the fact of the matter is that at the same time as facing this problem, there seems to be a policy position that's been adopted by the department not to engage in public-private partnerships. Now, I can understand, you know, reluctance to privatise a constitutional function as far as the care of inmates is concerned. But what I can't understand is why there is a reluctance to enter into partnerships with the private sector to construct facilities that quite clearly and quite self-evidently cannot be delivered by DPW on time, on budget, on specification, and everything else that goes with that. Now, I think that this is in line with what the Minister of Finance said during the budget. I think it's in line with what Minister Manuel said last year, that we've got to build these partnerships. And, you know, I would really like to see from the department some sort of indication of what sort of plans they have to tap into that potential and into that willingness.
Thanks, Chair. We would like to put it on record here that the department is not opposed to triple P's with respect to the construction in whatever form. Because if you look at the model that was presented by Finance, Treasury, with respect to the 4 triple P's that we use them as a reference, there were 3 models that were used: the triple P, PFM, and the federal country core. All those involved private sector in the main. We are seeing in this instance, IDC as an instrument, we're working outside the box. It is to create jobs and to create an infrastructure capability within the department to look at the best model available. And that is the key. And we want to indicate here that the model that we want to, the question of custodial responsibility still remains with us. If it moves to a point where in the instance of the triple, we had accepted the custodial aspect, that would have been accepted and done. But yes, it may change, because in this particular phenomenon, we are saying much as we're hamstrung by DPW inability to deliver, we did not sit and lament. We said, let's look at other institutions that can help us. IDT is an instrument where in efficiently it can deliver some of the projects. We can also look into our own capability as Department of Correctional Services, bring back the good modes of conduct of using offender labor. That can be done. So we cannot just sit and lament here. We as a department are saying, what are other models available for us to deal with some of these issues that you are raising, Mr. Sam? But we're not precluding any other format. But the fact of the matter is that at this point in time, all these agreements and contracts and projects were premised on DPW delivery. So any other thing that we may talk about is centered around public works as a center and a core. So we're saying we need to move away. We need to find credible means of finding solutions to the problems that we have. So this is what we have done as a department. And we think the model that we have taken now will be able to help us to think much broader in order to solve the problems that we have in terms of facilities. Some we tend to ourselves.
I've got two more questions for Ms. Mareka, and we're going to move on. The first one, Ms. Mareka, using your words earlier on when I think somebody asked you about the spending pattern, you indicated that we can't really utilize the money in areas where there are high vacancies. I think we're talking about doctors and those type of things. In other words, service can't be provided until the warm bodies are in place. That's what we're saying. Because the money is not money just to give them to go and buy. It's money that they get because of doing something for us. That's what you're saying. National Treasury says to me, CFO, that you have a 58% vacancy rate in what they term finance office officials, related professionals, and clerks. You have 138 as opposed to 327. HR officials, related professional, and clerks, 75% vacancy. 310 to your number of posts of 1258. Now I'm using what Ms. Mareka told the committee. That the reason why Mr. Self's concern is going to continue is because we don't have the warm bodies to be able to do that stuff in care and development, and therefore there's no services provided. Here we're talking about the administration of this department. There's only one in four people in HR. Only one in four people in HR. There's only one in two people in finance. And we're sitting here, Audit Commission, expecting to turn this department around. That's what we do. We're sitting here expecting to turn this department around with one in four people. So when we talk to you, you're going to have to explain to us, have you raised this thing with these people, or don't you see it as a problem? Because I certainly see it as a problem. When we've only got one in four people. I see it as a problem. And as the Audit Committee, I would expect you to raise them if you are of the view that I have. Or say to me, Mr. Smith, you are being a drama queen. But 57% financial vacancies, 75% HR and related vacancies. We'll come to you, Mark. We'll come to you. Mrs. Mareka did the presentation. She'll do the first, and you will come and clean up afterwards. Can you comment on those figures? Or are you not aware of that vacancy rate? Just in these two only, HR and finance.
Thanks, Chairperson. The figures as they stand, indeed, they do come from Vulindlela, which is the next part to this instance from our personal system. There is an exercise of cleansing these figures. So these figures are not clean. The vacancies are not clean.
No. You know, you'll make me chase all of you away from here. Commissioner, you'll make me chase you away from here. Because you see, this statement that Mrs. Mareka is making is what I started with earlier on. People came here last week and presented to us. And when we started getting into the meat, they said, no, let's, they're not really finalized. When I started this now, I said, you'd rather not say anything to us. Because Treasury is presenting this. Your credibility is on the line. Because you are taking stuff that needs to be cleaned, giving it to Parliament. You know, Parliament is not a subcommittee of the executive and government. Let's make this clear. Therefore, we are not a subcommittee of executive. We are equal to the executive. And we expect to get that type of treatment. You cannot come to this committee and say, these figures must be cleaned up. You cannot. You cannot come to Parliament and say to Parliament that the figures must be cleaned up. Really, guys, you can't do that. If we must take this thing up with the executive, we will do that. We are going to do that. I don't know what language you want me to speak, but if we must take these type of things up to the, and I'll come to you, Ms. Mareka, I'm just saying, you know, when you speak, you must be very careful what you say to us, because my interpretation of when you said it must be cleaned up is exactly what I'm saying. that these things are not clean, and therefore tomorrow you could come with something else that's not 57, it could be 75, or not 57, it could be 20%. We are not going to accept that. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Unfortunately, this is a report that was presented raw as it is by Treasury to be fed to the department. And from where one is sitting, had the department made this kind of a report available, that critical aspect would have been explained upfront by the department. So we're responding on a report table by Treasury. That's how I had to indicate that, that if it was part of our presentation, then Chairperson, in all fairness, I should think that indeed we should take that flag, and would have anyway at the department upfront indicate that this is what is there, this is what the department is working on, and these are the timelines that we're looking at. But unfortunately, we responded on a report that we're looking at that presents issues from the other side. But what I was saying is actually factual, Chairperson.
Ms. Mareka, when I started this meeting, I indicated that I had a report for Treasury. When Treasury spoke just now, they said they took this thing from Bulindlela, which is directly from your department. So it's not Treasury's report. Treasury extracted from your department. It's not Treasury's report. And if it's incorrect because it's raw, it's because at the time that Treasury, I don't know if you do this monthly or quarterly or weekly, but at the time that Treasury expected this information, then it was in that condition. What I'm saying is don't put the blame on Treasury, because this is your report. I also want to say to this department, when we call you here, I personally, maybe not other members, I personally verify what I'm going to ask you, at least from three sources. I never come to this portfolio committee if I haven't got Treasury, if I haven't got AG, if I haven't got Infor giving me information. I never come to this department without at least three sources. And that is why I said to you earlier on, and I'm repeating it again, Commissioner. Ingono would need two, then to come and give us information that you are not going to be able to defend. Because I will, when I say something, I will be able to go back to the source. And if the source is wrong, then the source will explain. Because I base everything I say on false figures, on Treasury figures, and the AG, and that's why they're here. So I'm repeating. Okay, I don't want to have an answer. I'm saying 57% vacancy in finance, 75% vacancy in HR, Audit Commission. I'm asking you guys to help. Because this is not going to fix up this department. I'm asking you guys, sir.
And you will respond, CFO. I certainly will give you the last word. The last, I said I have two more. The last one I want to go to. It's up to raise these things with you and you can respond. Again, I pick up from Bulindlela. Communication. Our spending on communication is 79% in somebody must have explained that to me. Our total spending for communication is about 63 million rand. Right? 63 million rand?
Sorry,
yeah, maybe you should come and have a look at these figures for me. I don't know if those are millions or whatever. Look at communications, Mr. Darling. Look at communications. That's the $63 million. Okay, million. Thank you, sir. Communication, 63 million rand spent to date. Operating payments, 61 million rand spent to date. Somebody must explain to me what is operating. 61 million rand spent to date. Social contributions, 1.6 billion rand spent to date. Training and development, we've got a budget of 2.8 billion, we only spent 700,000 rand. Audit Commission, I'm saying to you, we've got in training a budget of 2 billion. They only spend 700,000 there. So, those are the last issues that I wanted to raise. Communication, operating, social contributions. I just think that they are very high. They're not necessarily over budget. So they're not over budget. They're just very high. And I just need, in fact, Treasury has said in its comments, it is concerned in this economic climate that things like overseas travel, entertainment, and all those things. That's what Treasury said when they were responding to your report. So I'm raising them with you. Commissioner, I think you've got this report. The common theme from Treasury is management of the department is requested to take note of the uneasy trend in the aforementioned items and to ensure that corrective action is taken where necessary to ensure that appropriate funds are spent effectively, efficiently, and economically during the last quarter of 2012. That is the running theme on all these issues. So I'm raising them. Now, I don't know if you want to talk on those matters. I'm just raising them because I think they're very high. And then between the Commissioner and the CFO, you wrap up whatever you want to wrap up on this thing and we'll move on to the next one. I know, CFO, you had continuously wanted to say something on certain matters. It's over to the two of you and then we're going to move on to the other side of the person.
Chairperson, I pass my comment. I have taken note of the comments that you have made. When I raised my hand, it was in view of the fact that you had made it very clear that if either we comment or we don't, I would like, in view of this, to interrogate the documents, not to get into an argument or to criticize the presentation that has given us. But certainly, I would request that in the future, when we do presentation and you have sought their contribution, that we do have a sense as to what are the challenges that are there. So it's not to cleanse, but to understand where we might have faltered and also to see where things have not been achieved. Because we reported to the same institution. At the same time, if we are not having performing correctly, we know that there are being measures across the board. Thank you.
All right. I take your point on that one. I heard National Treasury saying that they sent this document to the Commission. I'm suggesting, Commissioner, because I use these documents as part of my reference. We all know when the next quarterly is going to take place. I would suggest before you do your presentation, before you do anything, that you guys get together so that when you come and explain, because this is part of my source documents, and POR is part of my source documents, and AG is part of my source documents. So this is government here. When these documents come, you guys must talk to us on that one. Fearful, you want to say something, and I want to hear specifically on those two vacancies.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of vacancies, Chairperson, the report of Bulindela is right on the detail. It's correct as well as what has happened? The funded position, it's only 41,911, which is funded, which we got budget. But what is sitting on Bulindela, what's sitting in Bas and Bulindela on one of those reports is 47,000, which means 6,000 is not funded. We don't have budget for it. But if you look in terms of the percentage of vacancy rates, it measures even the unfunded position, not only the funded position. That is the issue at the moment. What should happen, because in terms of Treasury, we already started to engage with the Chief Director, Mr. Mbeki, giving us a direction to say, Correctional Service, make those figures be the same, which is Bulindela and Kesar must talk the same language. Don't have the unfunded position included in one area, whereas it's not included in another area. I wanted to clarify that even if we report in the annual report, if the chairperson in the committee might remember, we highlighted this thing last year in November to say What we are reporting, as if every provision is funded. Whereas it's not true. It's only certainly cut about 2010 to say, because you department, you are not have the capacity to spend up to 46,000. So let's reduce the budget. Let's reduce the budget for 41,000. That is what is funded for as we point out. The other issue, Chairperson, that I wanted to talk about when it comes to the facility, although the National Commissioner also illustrated that in terms of public work. Chairperson, in terms of public work, it's not only doing the project as planned. Also, what is creating the problem is in terms of SLA, of signing the SLA. Because you find that they might delay the SLA towards the end of the last quarter, if only you receive the SLA. Now, even if you can receive the invoice, if there is no supporting documentation around that invoice, one cannot just pay. So I've been engaging with the public work. I also engaged with the CFO to say the SLA needs to be signed at the beginning of the year. We need to have the SLA in place. So that we know exactly if we come to spend, we know that we are paying for what is supported by the SLA. The other thing which has been, of which the honorable members raised, Mr. South, to say why we don't venture in other cases to the private company. Sometimes that one it might be difficult because you find during the budget process, one amount is earmarked that it needs to sit in the Department of Public Works. Now it has to be spent on that one. And also we got the SLA that is signed with the Department of Public Works. It's not that easy for us just to move. That's why the commissioner was alluded to say, in order to construct it, we already signed the MOU with the IDC. Because we are very, very concerned of our spending plan. We are very, very concerned. Because you find that, on the other hand, we are not spending in terms of the facilities, but if you go to our facility, it's really not. But the bicycle is always there. We are very, very concerned on that. As the commissioner was indicating that, we will plead to this committee to intervene so that we can be able to get that. Because really, when you look at the facility, we can correct most of all the problems. But the difficulty, certainly, will be the Department of Water. That is the problem, because if I can give you the history, 2010, we asked for the report, of which the work, public works was supposed to do. That amount was not spent. Now you have the road over on the other side, plus the budget for that particular year. That is the problem. Last year, we asked for the rollover, if this committee will remember, for 253 million, of which Treasury approved them for the work that was done, but not up to the satisfaction. That amount was not spent. We had, because Treasury was saying to us, we are giving you this amount, only if you can spend this amount at the end of, by the end of August. By the end of August, that amount of public works never ever moved. We have to suspend that amount. That is treasure. It is creating a problem for us to say, what else must we do? Because we engaged, in 2010, we engaged with the entire management of the Department of Works, including the NCDG then, all the CG. If Chairperson, you might remember, even on when you were at a meeting in the Devon Museum, which is a portfolio committee of public works, this issue was highlighted to say how these two departments can work together in order to make sure that the spending improves. But up to today, Chairperson, it does. I think at the moment, Chairperson, that is what I wanted to highlight at the moment. Okay, the other issue that Chairperson highlighted is in terms of the Vulindlela report versus the expenditure. It's more or less. What I will suggest on that question, I will engage personally with my team with Treasury, and then we go through to that report, looking at the draft report, because that information, it should be exactly the same. So I'm not saying it's different, but if the committee can allow us to go back and speak with Treasury so that we can compare this report, going through each and every line item to see each and every cost element, where does this the difference? And then we take it back, to the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chairman.
Totally in agreement. Okay, you guys. We don't need to receive any feedback on this because it's water under the bridge. Your next one, there won't be an excuse that we're not sure that we're talking to each other. I don't want to talk about December stuff going forward, but you can use the document that I've used to highlight the differences and the concerns that I've raised. Or I'll give you my one just to highlight the one that I have if you don't have one. Just so that you can get the stuff that I think is troublesome. Can we then move to the second part of the presentation? We will bring you in audit commission after that for your comments, and then we'll have a general discussion because the actual working and your stuff we can talk to together. Now, Treasury, thank you very much. You're very welcome to stay if you so wish, but we're really now getting into the meat and bones, but you're welcome to stay if you so wish. And the Auditor General as well, thank you very much, but you're welcome to stay if you so wish. I'm not sure Commissioner was going to do that part of the presentation.
Mr. Moody said, Mr. Moody, so did the presentation. Thanks.
Chairperson and honourable members, thanks for the opportunity to present our third quarter report to this House. The report that I'm going to give, Chairperson, is going to be a high-level presentation that talks to all the programs, the indicators, our achievements, and also what are the interventions that we are putting in place to address underachievement, but also maybe to explain as well in terms of particular program underachievement in context, what does it mean. I'll start with the table of contents that is there and start with the program administration, Chairperson. What we indicated to yourself is that out of the three indicators in the sub-program management, there was an underachievement, and the underachievement was on the following indicators that have been underachieved and the intervention, which is functional enterprise project management, where we indicated that there was underachievement. I would like to explain, Chairperson, that underachievement in this regard talks to us not having achieved what we had set ourselves. But preliminary work has been done with regard to this indicator where National Treasury has been approached to indicate how this enterprise project management needs to be done with regard to its functionality. Third program corporate services, out of the entire nine indicators, five of those indicators are showing underachievement. And those are the following are the indicators. Percentage of finance positions not filled. Interventions include continued advertisements of positions. At this point, we had two big advertisements planned for the fourth quarter, aggressive monitoring of the performance per region and per branch in making sure that our turnaround time for filling vacancies and absorption of learners into the fixed establishment comes into effect. With regard to the learners, Chairperson, I'm putting on record that on the 1st of March 2012, the learners that were found to be competent have been absorbed into the establishment of correctional services. The next indicator is the structure aligned to functions of DCF and white-paper imperatives. We are reporting here, Chairperson, that during the first year of implementation of the structure, 1.4 billion will be required to ensure that the structure of correctional services is aligned to the white-paper imperative. The next indicator, implementation of appropriate work shift, which is currently a discussion point in the chamber. Costing exercise has been done, but labor's overtime demands are unaffordable. The avenue of appointing an arbitrator is being explored, which I think was reported to this committee last week. The establishment of Functional Corrections Academy engaged research directorate on best practices and models and internal project coordination capacity allocated. With regards to the indicator, Chairperson, Department of Correctional Services is also in negotiation with National Intelligence, and we are very much positive that by the end of the fourth quarter, progress shall be indicated with regard to this indicator. Functional Professional Body for Corrections, capacitation of human resource development in process. The short-term contract workers for learnership and internship have been recruited, and in a long-term comprehensive review of the human resource development structure and post-establishment that needs to be looked into. Taking administration forward on the staff program finance, of the four indicators, two are indicating an underachievement, and those indicators are the following. First one, percentage of allocated budget spent. Here is the status report that COPPA recommended that the 483 million that we have been reporting as unauthorized expenditure be funded from projected underspending 2011-2012 financial year. And the second quarter violent letter was approved on 3rd December to pay off underspending against shortfall. I think my colleague has reported on this 483 million. Second indicator, value of contracts awarded to historically disadvantaged individuals, service providers. Our indication and performance is that 92.75% of contracts have been awarded to HDI service providers as at the end of October 2011. Sub-program central services. Required achievement in terms of the two indicators under legal services. Interventions to improve delivery on three IT indicators include service of database administrator that is required in relation to the peering point. Network design has completed 60% of the required information, and rollout of antivirus and network patches is underway with completion of the Eastern Cape migration from Linux to Windows 7. Of the three communications indicators, one is underachieved, and which is number of service articles originated by department to set favorable media agenda and track overall improvement. To ensure a comprehensive reporting, a detailed performance reporting shall be developed, used by regions to ensure that all good news stories are reported on a monthly basis, which would be in addition to other forms of reporting. On AFSA and SADC, there is only one indicator, and there was an underachievement. Interventions that include formalized regional, continental, and international partnerships, the engagement with the Mozambique Commissioner for Intervention, teleconference with steering committee to determine the way forward, engagement with corporate services to enhance capacity, consistent engagement with DECOs to obtain funding, action to be processed for approval for the revival of the Republic of South Africa Agreement with Zambia Joint Committee, proposed dates to be approved in areas of cooperation to be endorsed. The program security chairperson, out of the 11 performance indicators, 5 are indicating an underachievement. I think it should be 5, they're of the 11. And the following 5 indicators, percentage of assault, interventions, they include consideration to put up CCTV cameras inside cells, the putting up of panic buttons, increased security personnel and the implementation of the gang management strategy and structure. Second indicator, percentage of unnatural deaths. Interventions include introduction of high-risk assessment and behavioral risk assessment team, implementation of the gang strategy, and effective control of self-administered medication and compliance with security policies and procedures. Those would be interventions that we'd like to put in place. With regard to the indicator access control security, the appointment of a service provider in the first quarter to ensure integrated security technology, identification and sourcing of technical expertise. With regard to the fourth body scan, indicator, body scanning machine, a bid specification committee finalized business cases, the charter and bid specification by the end of February 2012. I think by the end of the fourth quarter, we shall indicate progress, how far we are with regard to an acquisition of those machines. An APIS for inmate identification, improved interaction between the Department of Correctional Services and CETA to fast track the integration of the JCPS cluster system, revised security policy procedures, and the policy procedures to be finalized in the fourth quarter. With regard to program corrections, four of the 15 indicators indicate their underachievement, and those indicators that have indicated that are the following interventions. Correctional census plans comply within 21 days. The intervention there is to ensure that during the monitoring evaluation visit, that the correctional centers ensure that the census plans are compiled within 21 days where corrective measures have to be taken that shall be done. Dedicated short-term facilities for offenders with sentences less than 24 months. The intervention will be to prioritize the transfer of short-term offenders to identified correctional centers. Rationalization of correctional centers, the finalization of the concept document that provides different models is to be done. And maximize utilization of land allocated to DCS. The department has acquired IDC to do the audit of all lands that the department is having, and once that report has been provided, this matter will then be finally concluded. With regard to program care, chairperson and members of parliament, out of the 8 indicators, 3 are having an underachievement, and those 3 indicators are percentage of HIV positive inmates eligible for antiretroviral treatment. Here we, the intervention then, chairperson, shall be provided by my colleague. I think there was an omission. Secondly, percentage of inmates with a CD4 count below 350 who are on ARV treatment. The same would apply. My colleague will provide the status. And the third indicator, percentage of inmates on medical treatment for communicable diseases, hypertension and diabetes, chairperson. I would like to move to the program development. Out of the 10 indicators, 4 are showing an underachievement, and they are the following: percentage of eligible offenders to participate in skills development programs, engagement with Department of Higher Education and Training to request NSF for training of offenders, participation in production workshops to prioritize the filling of vacant assistant positions, and the training entity, I think the department, as I have alluded to, is in discussions with National Treasury to ensure that we do deliver on the trading entity indicator. Also, attainment of agricultural quotas. We refer here to milk production, red meat, pork, chicken, eggs, food and vegetables. Purchasing of new breeding animals, these for improving infrastructure, equipment and machinery, and provision of technical support, putting of contingency plans in place and extending working hours of offenders. I think with regard to that indicator, chairperson, that those would be the interventions that we like to put in place. Social integration program, out of the 9 indicators, 5 have indicated that the achievement was not up to the level that we had committed ourselves, and here are the following interventions. Indicator percentage of eligible cases considered by the parole board, case management committee and correctional supervision parole board chairperson trained, and the importance of compliance with legislation has been brought to their attention. Second indicator, ratio of incarcerated offenders with sentences of 24 months and less. To launch a marketing strategy at promoting use of non-custodial sentences. And with regard to offenders released on medical parole, as a result of the review of the policy, the ministerial intervention that has been put in place, a new medical parole board policy, and the advisory board has been put in place with effect from the 1st of March 2012. That would also be reported properly in the fourth quarter. Consideration of all offenders sentenced before the 1st of March 1994. I think also the finalization of psychological report, a complete report shall be provided that all of those offenders have been considered in terms of the vacant concurrent buildings. The framework for halfway houses, the renovation that was needed at that facility we had in Johannesburg needed to be expedited. We shall also provide a report as the halfway house has been established at Naturena in Johannesburg. With regard to program facilities, all three indicators indicate an underachievement. I think questions have been put to the department with regard to facilities, one of which was on the triple P. I think what the department was saying is that there's been a policy change as to the procurement model and the funding model that had been put to us, and the concept as is not actually taken out, but suspended until a better procurement model has been found to be in place. The department shall be reporting in the fourth quarter about progress in that regard, as the fund for those four PPPs has been suspended by National Treasury. Upgrading of existing facilities, the chairperson has mentioned the facilities in the Western Cape series, Brantley, as well as Van Rensselaer. And here we are indicating that penalties imposed of poor workmanship and slow progress, penalties of 3.6 million imposed and 186 days behind schedule. New office space, the National Commissioner has spoken about the head office, where in the month of February, interaction between the National Commissioner and the acting DG to resolve issues was put in place. And this matter has now been escalated to the level of ministers. A new office space with regard to the element region is that the approved business case is still to be developed for procurement of the new office space. And percentage of centers appropriately equipped for white paper delivery. The department is going to be itself to fast track the scoping of repair work by public works. Finalization of the business case of LIUCO, for striking of implementation of orders by IDT, and approval of the business case for building of two facilities and a workshop is a multi-pronged strategy to ensure that we indicate progress with regard to modernizing our facilities to suit the white paper imperative. Chairperson and the members, this is the high-level report that you'd like to provide to yourself. The details thereof has been also provided to yourself. And if the chairperson and members would like us to explain further, I think this team shall be doing that. I would like to thank you at this point.
Thank you, sir. Internal audit. The last time we met, I think, was after we had had our own interaction with the then sitter, I'm not sure if it was acting or permanent, in preparation for the budget or the review of the budget. We came out of that meeting petrified with what we heard about the state of IT in that department then. We raised it in our budget speech. We then had an interaction with yourself, I think, in this very venue, where to a large extent you confirmed our concerns about the terrorist state of IT. Let's forget everything else, of IT in this department. If memory serves me correctly, we were even saying things like you can't even send emails to each other. And this is a department that is a hospital, a hotel, a school, a prison, all in one. And it doesn't have IT at the time. In your audit report, 23rd of August last year, the audit committee considers the internal audit function to be under-resourced and internal audit cannot operate optimally given its current resources and budget in order to address the risks pertinent to the department in its audit. That was your final statement and the audit committee is there. And we'd ask you to come back hoping that we can have this type of a discussion. I'm not sure if subsequent to our meeting here that you've interacted with the department. I'm not sure, but I'd like you to just give us a up-to-date synopsis of what you think is happening in the department. Then we can open it up for discussion. IT being the specific one that we are concerned, but if there are others that you have identified post our meeting, you are free to raise them. And then we'll open it up for a general discussion. And AG, maybe yourself, if there's anything, I'm not sure if you've had any interim orders or whatever, that we really are talking about the state of the department. That's what we are talking about. The state of DCS. You can add, and then we open it up for discussion. But let's start with you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. Since our last meeting, we've had two special audit committee meetings with the department because what then happened was the department appointed a consortium which is made up of PwC and Gela to give capacity to internal audit. So you have a team or a consortium of audit firms in the DCS environment. We have since been advised by the department that a new audit head, the executive who was introduced to all of us this morning, is in place. So for all intents and purposes, internal audit has got leadership. So it's got a head plus two audit firms that are supposed to give capacity to the 20 permanent employees of the department. Since then, Chair and members, we've got an audit plan, an audit coverage plan, with specific instructions to the internal audit team to look at IT risks for the department. So our next meeting is on the 29th of March because the audit team has been working since last year, November, December. We will be receiving the first report on the 29th of March on all the audit plans that the team had been working on. IT has been a critical area that has been identified by the audit committee. As you've been informed, we understand they have actually appointed a new GITO. Which was a matter of concern to the audit committee that that whole unit was leaderless. Now they've got a team. We have not met the GITO. We will meet, I suppose, on the 29th of March with the entire team and just to look at the progress that has been done in terms of doing the audit in terms of the coverage plan that we had agreed upon as the audit committee. So, Mr. Chairman, I think we can't give you an answer on whether things are happening or not happening in the department. The audit committee will only have sight of the work that has been done since November, only now on the 29th of March. And hopefully, after that, we will be able to give you a sense of whether we are comfortable as the audit committee with progress within the department or not. Just to add that we had requested from the department that we conduct a risk workshop with all the members of the team, because what we see, and that is our observation, is that unless almost everyone in the department, and especially at senior level, understands the ramifications and implications of the actions and the legislation, regulatory requirements, and we all are on the same page, we have the opportunity of changing and rectifying a lot of things if you can all be in one room and understand the risks of the things that we do on a daily basis. So today we are still waiting for the department to confirm when that risk workshop will be held between ourselves as the audit committee and the top layer of the executive team of DCS. Unless there's more to add from my colleagues, but I think in a nutshell, Mr. Chairman, that's where we are.
Anybody to add from internal from audit commission? Anybody on any aspect, not limited to that? Any aspect in terms of the state of the department, because it's all of our responsibility, and we all fail. If DCS fails, then we all succeed if DCS succeeds. Nobody of you has said that.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I myself agree with the comments made by the current chairman of the audit committee. I must say that as an audit committee member, I was the acting chairperson in the absence of a chairman for some time. And you don't serve on an audit committee to win any fashion contests or popularity contests. And I think that's particularly evident at the Department of Correctional Services. We have had inordinately difficult experiences over the years in fulfilling our oversight function properly. Chair, I'm saying this for purposes of transparency, and I think it would be irresponsible if I didn't actually give you my views, as difficult as it might be to give these. I was appointed by the previous minister of the department as an audit committee chairman, whom I never met. I've met with the current minister only once, and that wasn't at the meeting that held last year. I was introduced prior to that. The audit committee, on several occasions, requested a meeting with the minister at her convenience. We said we'd meet at night, we said we'd meet over weekend. This was done over a number of audit committee meetings where we requested this meeting, and eventually a meeting was held at the end of last year, October, November last year. The audit committee only meets four times a year, statutorily, and we meet for about 4 to 5 hours a time at each meeting. For the year ended March 2011, there were 5 meetings because there was one special meeting. The audit committee has resolved that agenda papers get delivered at least 7 days before a meeting so that we can adequately prepare. Agenda papers are often delivered on the night before the meeting, where a meeting starts at 8 o'clock the next day. You can't adequately prepare. I must say we've had very acrimonious meetings with department management, where we've actually laid on the line what we believe the situation to be, which was that we felt we were being purposely, issues were being obfuscated by the department to the audit committee, so that the audit committee could not properly fulfill its oversight responsibility. I must say this was taken head on by management. They said no, they do take the audit committee seriously, in taking the audit committee seriously, they believe that we are an integral part in playing our oversight role at the department. But it has been very difficult. The audit committee for the entire year ending 31 March 2011 consisted of only 3 members. You will see in the annual report for last year, Chair, that that those three members, all three, attended each and every meeting. So we attended the meetings. We actually wanted to do what was necessary. We implored the department to get the minister to appoint additional audit committee members, and two additional audit committee members were appointed, but they were only appointed on the 1st of July 2011, which is after the end of the financial year. So it places a heavy onus on three members only of the audit committee to try and fulfill the oversight responsibility properly. So we certainly have had significant difficulty. We also feel that there hasn't been, when I say we, I'm giving you my views, Chair, and the other audit committee members can speak as well. But there has not been complete openness and transparency with the audit committee. There were reports that were commissioned by the department. The Special Investigation Unit came in and did reports. We requested these repeatedly over a period of more than a year at each and every meeting. And eventually, we got some feedback on those. You know, there were issues that we said. We actually went as far as saying, if you don't trust us, you don't give it to us, but then we'll fire up as audit committee members. But we believe we've got a responsibility to see what came out of these reports, which I must say, Chair, never came through. So, Chair, as I say, it has been especially difficult. Risk management within the department, the risk management, I believe, is technically sound, and it's well prepared in terms of the whole risk management framework. But the department's line management do not take risk management seriously. We have been informed that the line management don't attend the risk management meetings within the department. People are not held to account, or were not held to account, for the responsibilities that were allocated them to manage the risk. In other words, the risk owners had to look at mitigation measures for the controls to mitigate those risks. And the people just weren't absent or didn't present reports at risk management meetings. This is the information that was fed to us at audit committee meetings. The new chief audit executive, the committee hasn't been introduced, but the person has been introduced today. But the previous chief audit executive, who reports functionally to the audit committee, or who reported functionally to the audit committee, as they should, was suspended without any notification to the audit committee. We were told after her suspension that she'd been suspended. The Coast Source Internal Audit Service Provider, the previous incumbent Coast Source Internal Audit Service Provider, which was a consortium of KPMG and SABNC, their contract came to an end, and the contract was terminated without reference to the Audit Committee. And then there were lengthy delays in the appointment of a new outsourced or co-sourced internal audit service provider, and there's still a concern that the audit committee has in terms of the budget for that co-sourced internal audit service provider. We haven't really been given a fully understandable what is the budget, because we believe that they were possibly appointed at a budget more than what they than they thought they were actually going to deliver on. So that we still have a concern, and we haven't been given a final information on that. I must say I concur fully on the issue with IT. I still cannot send an email to the department, which is but a small issue, but I don't believe that IT is able to deliver on the department's initiative as it currently is, which is actually imperative. And I must say, well, I hope the new GTO is able to actually deliver on that. But I think without the required skills and the required budget to do that, we're flogging the dead horse, really. And IT is clearly critical in terms of where we act going forward. You can't operate without IT. Chair, those are the issues specifically that I wanted to raise. I must say there's some issues that arose today that were a surprise to me. I didn't know about them, which is a concern to me as an audit committee. And I'm scared to actually buy a newspaper or turn on the television to watch the news in case something comes up about correctional services, which I believe the audit committee should be apprised of if we're going to fulfill our oversight responsibility properly. Thank you, Chair.
Anybody else on this, Chief?
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Member, just a quick one from my side. I'm thankful that the ETO has finally been appointed.
and I pledge my support in case you need assistance. I'm available to do that, to help the department. Thanks.
Somebody from your side?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. From our side, as the AG, we are concerned also about the general weaknesses that we have we have looked at the IT as far as the governance is concerned, and also as far as the controls are concerned. But what particularly concerns about the accounting system logic, that it's responsible for fixed assets. That was the modification that the department did last year, and something was supposed to be done on the fault that was identified in the system. As far as we know, not much has happened in collecting that error in the system at the moment. I understand the department is using some manual interventions to try to address the issue, but we're still busy with our interim audit. As far as we know, the issue has not been fully addressed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let us baptize the internal audit and the detail head in the only way that I know, and I think Portfolio Committee knows, is by asking you directly, what do you understand you were appointed to be doing, and do you appreciate the challenge that you are facing now that you've spent the whole day with us? Can we start with internal audit? Also to indicate to both of you that if you've not been told, let it come from the horse's mouth. We do not want to see consultants running your organization. Ditto, you had no internal audit. I mean, you had no permanent somebody in your department at some point. It was run entirely by consultants. Some consultants that were there for 20 years, it must come to an end. And the same with you guys. So what is your plan in terms of getting skills in the department? Because I hear that there are two audit firms, and I don't have a problem with them because they are there to build and to start it off. But it's not going to last. You're not going to come to this committee next year and say to us, you don't have DCS people that can do internal audit, because I won't find them at this. I will go and find them at this. We don't have a shortage of BCom students in South Africa. We don't. And the same with this. You have to explain to us, we can't have IBM and all these people running the show. If they walk away, we are left here with nothing. I want to repeat to both of you, I consider this as a hospital, a hotel, a school. None of those institutions can ever survive without IT. And you have all of them in one, over and above the fact that you are part of the security cluster. And DCS's failure means nobody sleeps easy in South Africa. So that's our sentiment. I know you knew, you probably have not met with us until now. It's rather we give you exactly what you can expect from us going forward. We're not always this nasty. But today we have to be nasty. So let's start with internal order.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. First of all, Chair, I think I need to say that I understand the challenge that lies ahead of us, especially as internal auditors of the department. And perhaps if I may go to the issue of skills, I agree with you, Chairperson. I also don't believe that the people to fill the internal audit unit are not out there. They are out there. But the issue that has been having with the department is that issue of the post that exist but are not funded. But Chairperson, I must say that I'm engaging with corporate services so that we correct that. Because I understand that it would not help of the department to have the consortium, amongst other things, required to transfer the skills if there aren't any people to transfer the skills to. But if we were doing our jobs correctly as the internal audit, at least the 20 people that we already have in the division should be able to absorb those skills. And I'm glad that there is an approved plan of the skills transfers, among other things that we have in relation to this contract, and I will make sure that it works. But Chairperson, again, on the issue of the consortium, I must highlight to the committee that the consortium is appointed for a period of 2.5 years, which means their contract only expires in March 2014. So even next year, we are still going to have them. But the reason is not going to be that we can't find people to fill the vacancies in internal OT. That can't be an issue. People are out there. There is a well-structured internship program, for example, by the Institute of Internal Auditors that look at the qualifications of the people that you can employ. It has got a structured program when you train them so that there is a logbook that they sign off so that come the end of the contract, you can't complain and say they are not ready to assume the duties. It's guided something almost similar to what you would have for the articles for external auditors. So the issue of that, the skills are not there, also don't bind. The issues that the chairperson of the audit committee raised, that IT is a concern, it is in the plan, it was approved in the internal plan, yes, I agree with that. We are busy with those reports and we should be presenting them to the audit committee 7 days before the meeting of the 29th, because I hear that is one of the biggest concerns that the audit committee has. As an honorary member of the audit committee has alluded to the fact that they only meet for plus minus 5 hours in a meeting, and really for them, we can't expect to contribute meaningfully if we were to give them the pay for the night before. It is a commitment. I understand that. I've seen that elsewhere in the minutes. I've had discussions with internal auditors. I understand that to be a challenge. It looks small, but it's very big, because for them to apply their minds meaningfully and contribute meaningfully to this department, we need to provide them with the necessary information well in advance for them to do that. So, Chairperson, like I said before, I understand the challenge that lies ahead of us, but I think we are going to win. Hopefully, when we come back after the meeting of the 29th to the portfolio committee, we will be able to say whether the department has made progress on the issues that have been previously raised or not. But obviously, ours is not just to report on the findings. We need to assist the department to come up with practical recommendations that can help this department to be a better department that we all want to see. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tita.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members. I think in terms of the extent of the work that needs to be done, I fully understand it. And we have already started in correcting some of the issues that we have observed. I've been doing also around the correctional centers just to have a proper sense of what are the challenges. The design of the network is also one of the key issues that makes us not deliver in certain things, in transporting of information, in transporting of the emails. We've already started consolidating all the services into CITA, which is our common place. We know that CITA has challenges, but there are certain things that they are good at that we know we can leverage on. We already engaged with CITA in terms of the migration from the open net into the VPN, which they have already made promises in delivering of those services to us. So constantly we're working with CITA in correcting some of the challenges that we have observed. In terms of the consultants, I think by October last year, already 60% of the consultants that were there have already left. So the remaining 40% that is there, 25% of the 40, I have noted that there are more administrators, not even skilled people in terms of technical knowledge. So those are the ones that we really don't need in the department, because we don't need people to come and manage the unit. So those are the ones that we will be able to also relieve at the end of March. So then the remaining 75% of the 40% will be the skill that is required that will complement the establishment. We also had about 18 new resources, which are junior developers as well as technicians that have started last year as well, which we are currently using to do some of the work. And we also looked at the job descriptions of the vacancies. Those were very administrative job descriptions. So I re-looked at them and described and defined new job descriptions for those vacancies, and those ones will also be discussed with HR for job evaluations, and we'll advertise those posts, which make up almost 75% of the vacancies that exist in the unit. So those are the things that we already started working on. We'll be able to meet with the audit committee. We've already met with the AG. Fortunately, some of the members of the AG, I do know them, so we are able to discuss and come up with proper action plans to correct the environment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. The audit committee, the AG, internal audit, and Jicho. Our next quarterly meeting is on the 16th of May, unless there's a crisis. And you don't all have to come, but I certainly, audit committee, if you're around, especially now because it's going to be after your meeting, please, if one of you can at least come and share with us what your plan is or whatever. At worst, give us some documentation in writing. But on the 16th of May, we will have this meeting with the department. And internal audit, etc., you will be on the agenda. It's not just going to be finances and operations, but we're going to expect internal audit to give us something on your progress, and the same with Jetto. And AG, by then, also yourself, if you can give us something. It's only the 16th of March. It's going to be very much the same, so that we have sufficient time. And of course, once again, Treasury will be with us. Because it will be the last meeting we'll have probably before the financials, the annual report comes out. This committee doesn't want any surprises in the report. You know, audit committee, if you were to say in your annual report that you are going to write this department or whatever, at least tell us at that meeting that, look, our objective, honest view is that this thing is in crisis, and that's what we're going to reflect, so that we are not shocked when the audit, when the annual report comes out. And similarly, the Auditor General will give us a sense of what is going to come out, because that will be post the financial year end. And we just want to be prepared accordingly. So we're going to meet on the 16th of March. Having said that, can I open up to members? Remember, we've now heard about their underachievements in whatever. We've heard CETA, we've heard internal audit, and we've heard external audit as well as the AG, Mr. Sell, Munir Max, Mamgwen, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'd really like to ask some specific questions and then put a general proposition. The specific questions are as follows. You referred, Chair, earlier to the overtime and the risk that was involved in that overtime. It's been alluded to on page 2 of this, where they were talking about the implementation of an appropriate work shift system, and then go on to talk about the avenue for appointing an arbitrator being explored. Well, I'd like to explore the exploration a little bit further, if that's okay. I'd like to know exactly what's being done and what the risk is, and if you can answer the chairperson's question a little bit more fully about whether or not this is a risk, and if it is a risk, whether there's budget that has been set aside for it. The second concerns the halfway houses. They were due to be open, the halfway house was due to be open at the end of February. Has it been open since we're now into March? The third question concerns the electronic access control, where I see that in the third quarterly target, one additional system, 100% installed. We're now up to 31.5%, i.e. 24 out of 76 access control are now fixed of the ones that were installed by a company. So in other words, what we're now doing, as I understand it, is we're fixing things that were handed over to the department in a situation that was not, in fact, correct. Then I'd like a little bit more information about the electronic inmate tracking devices, and whether those apply only to the movement of the offenders within correctional centres, or whether any progress has been made to track parolees and probationers. But finally, as a general trend, the gentleman from Internal Audit, and I'm sorry, I forgot your name, sir, but I missed the point. He said that he wakes up worrying about whether he's going to open his newspaper and see that there's a bad story from the Department of Correctional Services about which he knows nothing. And there are two programs here in the department itself that deal with improving the press publicity of the department, getting so-called good news stories into the newspapers. Well, I venture to suggest that the way one gets good news stories into the newspapers is by doing good things and getting things right. And if you look at the trend in this report that we saw today, I'm afraid that the following sort of strikes me, that there are ludicrously small numbers of vetted officials, that the escapes are up, that the unnatural deaths are up, that assaults are up, that vacancies are up despite filling vacancies. In other words, that says to me that there are more people leaving than we can actually fill the vacancies. So despite efforts to fill vacancies, the vacancy rate is increasing. There are very small numbers of youth attending formal schooling, 17.3%. There are very small numbers of people attending production workshops. The goal is 2.42%, and the department hasn't even achieved that. Now, Chair, I have a problem, because it doesn't seem to me that you are going to be able to get a good news story out of those trends. In fact, you're going to get a bad news story out of those trends. And it doesn't seem to me, as I look through this, in terms of the what is being said, that the department is sufficiently engaged in dealing with these issues. I just don't get the sense of urgency. I don't get the sense that we are on top of this issue, that we're going to deal with this issue, that we've got a plan, that the systematic plan is going to be rolled out over a period of time. And that doesn't even deal with issues such as IT, which we've spoken about before. So just systemically, it seems to me that if I look from a bird's eye view, it seems that things are getting worse rather than getting better. And I hope I'm wrong about that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, the department.
Chairperson and members, I think maybe just to conclude on what my colleague has said with regard to the risk. There are negotiations underway. The only stumbling block is the overtime, which I think correctional services, when the resolution was signed, had done that. Under the influence of the OSD that has been signed. which caused us to have that agreement. And what we try to say at this point in time is that we shall also have to ensure that the Department of Public Service and Administration gets involved in this matter, as it had then happened that we are in that situation because of the OSD that we had to implement. We had no choice whether we had the funds or not. I just wanted to raise that. But coming to the issues that are raised by the Honourable Member of Parliament, Mr. Self, with regard to the Halfway House, yes, Chairperson, I must report that the Halfway House, which we had talked about, had been opened at Naturena on the 24th of February, last month. It houses six residents with house parents, fully functional. The electronic access control facility, we are indicating there that the target of the third quarter was that all the tenants had to be fully functional. And then our performance in that regard is that not all 100% of them are fully functional. Only, I think, 31% that is fully functional control centers, at the centers where they are installed. That's why we are indicating there, from us, this is an underachievement. Now, we need to also explain the Chairperson that the maintenance contract, as well as the refurbishment of the software of all these centers, Chairperson, was one of the aspects that needed to be looked into by the department with GITO and CITA, because the contract is expiring at the end of March, the contract that we had with the service provider. Now, what the department then decided to do was to say, we're not going to request that service provider to renew any infrastructure, any software, but to issue out a new tender that would then enable us to operate all of the turnstiles and the access control systems that we have in place. So work is at very advanced stage with the finalization of specifications with the CDC GITO, but also with IDT. And why we're doing that is to frustrate the functionality of all of these sensors as they might be creating for us a security risk. Chairperson, in matrix.
Chair, sorry, can I just get it clear? Are we now extending another contract to get these turnstiles to work? Is that what you're saying?
No, Chairperson, we're not extending any contract. We have these systems in place, the turnstiles and CCTV camera, which in the past were done by public works where the contract, the standing contract. At this point in time, there is no standing contract. Now, the Department of Correctional Services has to take over the operationality of all of these systems. That is why we then have to have the contractor to be able to do that function. Chairperson, the next question of electronic inmate tracking, I think here we are referring to inmate tracking inside correctional facilities. And then we had set ourselves that target that we should have had the specifications being completed during the third quarter. But what Mr. Self is asking is whether we have looked into putting tagging systems also for other offenders. I can report that we have the electronic tagging of paroling, life funds that has been released as a result of the consideration of the funds they can consider and take, which minister had then decided to either place on day parole and or place on full parole. Life funds that have been released in the Gauteng region have all been tagged. On the 9th, life funds of the Limpopo will be tagged, and we will then be rolling that out region per region as part of the pilot for electronic tagging. that electronic chairperson taking intervention actually tries to ensure that supervision and monitoring of those that have been released into communities is effected, and that correctional services shall then be in a position to know exactly where coverlets are. At this point in time, chairperson, once we have implemented fully, before the end of the year, the department shall then also have to take a decision as to whether we are holding out, have we done all analysis, and take into whether what would then be best that would ensure value for money for the department. And then the inmate tracking shall also be looked in as a manner of ensuring that offenders, as they are in our correctional facilities, we are then able to say exactly where is this person and that person. Chairperson, maybe just to conclude on the vetting, it is our understanding in correctional services that officials get vetted as a result of the positions in which they are. What we can state as a department is that as officials join correctional services, their suitability for employment is being done by the Department of Correctional Services. When people get promoted to particular positions, head of correctional center, area commissioner, chief deputy commissioner, and so on, then those people are subjected to a vetting process that shall be done by the competent agency, in this case, national intelligence. So what we're trying to say with that is that not everybody is supposed to be vetted as we would vet, for instance, the Chief Deputy Commissioner of Corrections, the National Commissioner of Correctional Services. We will have to break down the totals that we have provided to the Portfolio Committee, but also as part of our reporting, to ensure that when we say vetting, we refer to which officials and at which level, and then I think we'll be in a better position to respond to that indicator better. We take cognizance of the analysis that is done by the Member of Parliament with regard to escapes having gone up and natural death and assault. But what is important, Chairperson, with regard to all of those mentioned critical indicators, the Department was able, Chairperson, overall, to bring down the rate of escape for a considerable traceable period. And at this point in time, as we speak, when you look into our year target, you will find that escapes have gone down, and natural deaths have gone down. Safe only to say that in the last quarter, which is for us a turbulent time at all correctional centers, we would know that it is the period of December, just leading to December, and that is when offenders become itchy, offenders are locked up most of the time, and that's when the assaults do take place, and that's when offenders also try to escape. And the chairperson, I was just mentioning that at the end of the year, when we do the year report, it would be clear that all of our escapes and natural deaths and assaults have significantly gone down, and indicating therefore that for the year 2011-2012, the department has done good. Yes, we understand that. We may not be saying that in the manner that we are supposed to say, because one escape, one erroneous release gets elevated to the entire population of our country, whereas the little things that we are doing right is not reporting on. We're taking note of that, and I think the department shall as well do its level best to have a strategy in place to ensure that the people of South Africa, but also the fact that there is upward improvement with regard to achievement of set targets. The same would apply to production workshops, where our numbers have gone down and the youth that is attending school. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Morisa, let me just give you a little bit of advice around the vetting issue. I understood you to be saying, no, as you go up in the organization, that's when you get vetted by me and somebody else. The people that we need to get vetted are those that are on the shop floor. Those are the people that open up the cells and allow people to walk out. Those are people that bring in cell phones and bring in data to the facility. Those are the people that take the real decisions around procurement. You guys are top. I have no problem if you are vested, it's fine. But the problem and the mistake we've made as this government is that we thought that it's the top that needs this and the real mischief is being done at the bottom. I'm saying it to you as procurement as well. The real mischief is those people that take decisions at Leocom. It's those people that take decisions at Sun City about who's going to give them bread and who's going to do whatever. So when Mr. Self talks about vested, I don't think that we must relegate this thing to say, no, we're not really going to worry about the order that is being appointed. We'll worry about when that order gets appointed as the head of correctional. You're making a mistake. You are really making a mistake, because if those people that are the 26ers, the 28ers, we see them every day when we go to our oversight centers. We want those people to be vetted. I want to know the guy that takes the shift from 6 o'clock to 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, who's that chap? Because when the state happened in Free State, it's not you guys at head office. It's the guy that is there that allows these people to pretend to be lawyers and to be whatever and to walk in. So I just think that you guys need to relook. If what you are saying is that is your strategy for vetting, I just think all of us must relook at that thing, because I think you're making a mistake. I think you're making a mistake. Mr. Advocate, next.
Thank you. My concern is actually with regard to the relationship between the Internal Audit Committee as well as the department. The first speaker mentioned that there is now a consortium established and leadership. Now, I just want to know who's paying now who. Because there's different companies involved, who bears the cost for whom. The other thing, Chair, is last year that the very same committee made a very scathing attack towards the department. And what is the situation since? Did it improve? And it seems to me from the second speaker of the audit committee that some of these things still exist. And now with regard to the second comment, the chair, the person who spoke, the acting chair, he said that even minutes or agenda is not delivered in time, information is not properly given to them, difficult to execute their mandate, and a certain person is also to be suspended without the knowledge of the committee. Now, it seems to me that there's a relationship of distrust between the parties. And in my view, my understanding is that the internal committee is the committee who directs and guides the department to achieve an outcome from the AG that, a clean slate. And if there's this distrust between the parties, then it's difficult to achieve that goal. How are they going to address this issue? You mentioned already there's another follow-up meeting. And I just want to know, how will they overcome the difficulty between the two parties?
Let's start with the audit committee first. Your relationship with the department, and it's just a lamenting session, or what do you plan to do to repair relations if indeed they need repairing?
Thank you, Chair. At our last meeting, we did indicate that we were a bit frustrated with the way the audit committee is being treated by the department. And my colleague has already alluded to some of those. We gave you our observations of how we relate to each other. And the fact that we called for a meeting with the minister was precisely to address some of those problems. That the audit committee is a central, and it plays a central role in the workings of the department. We have said consistently to the department that we are not a nuisance, we are there to assist.
But small things, Mr. Chairman, then you ask yourself, is it deliberate or not? Because if you ask for information consistently without fail and you don't get it, then there's a fundamental problem. And you realize that there's no one is taking responsibility to ensure that that happens. Why I said there's leadership is because now you have the head of internal audit, and hopefully, our agendas, the minutes, and all the issues that we have raised consistently over time will be attended to, because we've got someone responsible for internal audit. And I'll just give you small examples. The appointment of the consortium, and the honourable member wants to know who bears the cost. The costs are going to be borne by the department. They've accepted that they don't have the critical skills to be able to conduct internal audit work, so they need extra help. So they'll appoint a consortium made up of audit firms. This is not new from what I gather. They've done it before. They did it the previous financial year. We've got new auditors for the next 3 years. So the department bears the cost of that consortium. Now, surely the appointment of auditors, especially the ones that you need to assist your internal audit, will be to a certain extent the responsibility of the audit committee. The audit committee will have a say on what are the specifications, what are the expectations. But at some point we're left out in the loop in the appointment of the auditors and even the cost thereof, because we are given a different understanding on what is available. And we have actually asked the AG to relook at the tender amount of that contract, so that then we are on the same page in terms of what was agreed upon in engaging the service of the audit firm. We're very patient. I'm speaking on behalf of everyone, but we've been very patient with the department. And we're going to continue to be patient, but be able to nudge and probe and be on their faces for the right reasons. Not because we are a nuisance, but because we understand the role that we are supposed to play. And we are going to be assisted by the head of internal audit to make sure that everyone in the department understands the role that we play. We had said in our last meeting in December, we said we want to have a direct link to the commissioner, and we still want to maintain that we would like to have that direct link with the commissioner. When the commissioner is not going to be able to make it to the meeting, acting courteously, it's for him to give me a call and say, I can't make it, whatever. You get to a meeting, no one seems to know why the commissioner is not at the meeting. So we are very patient, Mr. Chairman and members. We are going to be professional in the way we address and attend to our responsibilities, and hopefully the head of internal audit will assist us to bridge the gap between ourselves and the department. And I think we need to emphasize we are not a nuisance, and that's for me, fundamental. We are not a nuisance, and we don't want to be seen as a nuisance. I think unless the department understands the role that audit committee plays in their lives, then I'm sure there will be a better appreciation of the need for an audit committee in this year. So, Chair, we will continue to be on their faces in the right way, and continue to assist where we can. But I think we're going to get to a point, and I think we have said it already in our minutes, that in the event that the documentation is not available in time, we will not see it, because it's a waste of resources and even our time. So it is for a recognition from the department through the head of internal audit that our life is made easy, and even the life of the team in the department is made easy, and we can work in unison and with respect, mutual respect for each other. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's just re-emphasize that point that the Chair has made twice or three times. The Audit Committee is not a unit. PFMA says there must be an Audit Committee. So those of you that thought maybe these people are just a nuisance, maybe audit, that's why we want you here, because we also want you to be able to tell us, what do you require Parliament to do to break the deadlock? Because we're not a subcommittee of DCS. So when you have these type of frustrations, feel free to write to Cindy and say, Baba, Labandulaba are not making life easy for us. The second part, Mr. Max, just to answer your question. This consortium contract runs from the 18th of October 2011 to the 31st of March 2012, and it cost 22.6 million rand. That's the internal audit. So internal audit, you'll have to come and explain to us what that 26.6 million rand was. Brilliant. You're going to have to come and explain that to us. Documentation, and I see people opening their eyes. You better not, because this is your document that you've given us. You better not open your eyes. These are your documents that you've given us. That I have in front of me, appointment of service provided to assist internal audit unit of Department of Correctional Services with all internal and related tasks in a co-source capacity period ending 31st of March 2014, coming from the department. The service provider is PwC Sekela Consortium. Starting date 18th of October 2011, end date 31st of March 2014, 22.6 million rand. So I hope that answers your question, Mr. Mack, so that you understand that as long as you're in this committee, maybe you need to ask the question every time. What is 26 million rand buying us for 2 months? I mean for 2 years. From 2011 to 2014, the end of 2011 to 2014, and an internal audit head will ask you that question also. Maybe you didn't know it, but I'm giving it to you now. You've got until the 31st of March 2014, and we would expect that 22 million rand has bought us sustainability going forward forever, because we can never in 3 years' time pay another 22 million rand for another consortium to come and in-source its services. You're the last one, Mangwenya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on page 2, on the percentage of the violence post not failed, Chair, I want to know that how is the department going to, when is the department going to report to us about the posts that have been silenced that at least they did meet the deadline? I'm worried because these posts, Chair, have been silenced, but nothing is happening. What difficult are the department make them not to fill these posts? To Chair, in terms of appropriate work sheet system, also Chair, is not clear to me. I want a clarity, Chairperson, again, that what difficulties are they making them not to implement this shift system, because when we go to oversight check, you'll find that
there's a shortage of staff, especially on weekends. And maybe we can get that in terms of these 7 days establishment, what difficulties the department to implement it? Chair, on health, on program of care in terms of health is not clear to me. I need the clarity in terms of intervention, not clear. What do they mean in terms of the HIV positive inmate? And all the bullets, Chairperson, there are three bullets, and all these bullets, Chairperson, is saying intervention not clear, intervention not clear, intervention not clear. Can the department explain what do they mean about that? The implementation that I see is that at least the department have tried in terms of social reintegration is the medical forum, at least there is a date that in 2012 there's something that has happened. But here, maybe I can add, but correct me if maybe I'm putting this on the wrong document. I was expecting to hear the department to tell us about the implementation of the awaiting size uniform. If it doesn't fall under this chair, then you'll correct me. Yeah, I think for now, Chair, this is what I noted. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gwenya. Department, anybody in any order?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would first like to respond to the issue of minimum finance vacant positions. As at the end of December, that is the quarter under review, the third quarter, the department has a finance establishment of 41,911 and a sales position of 39,992, that is 39,992. And they can position of 1919 with a vacancy rate of 4.8%, that is at the end of December. The department is currently busy filling this position, and we have just taken an intake of plus minus 800 learners who completed their learnership in January. So this vacancy rate by the end of March would have gone down a great deal. We are looking at 3% vacancy rate by end of March or below. Chairperson, on the issue of the difficulties related to the 7 day establishment implementation, as my colleague had indicated earlier, that we have consultations with the union and we have agreed on a number of issues. There is also an in-principle agreement on the model shift system that we have to move to. But the difficulty here is that the union wants the department to move on the new future system, on the new system that is being looked at until the issue of the overtime pay has been resolved between the unions and the department. So there are consultations, but the starting block is the issue of overtime pay that is being claimed by the union. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I think I should come in here with regard to medical parole and the remand uniform implementation. Chairperson, there were challenges with regard to the establishment of the medical advisory board. I think the biggest challenge was the stipend that needs to be paid to the doctor, which most doctors did not see that it is adequate enough. Fortunately, Chairperson, the intervention of the National commissioner, commissioner and minister, a number of doctors have been approached, who have agreed to serve on the medical advisory board, which came into being on the 1st of March 2012. The board is currently appointed and established, and once they have got the challenges that are with regard to the consideration have been put in place, and the structure in the regions has also been put in place, I think the work that we expect them to do for the department shall be done by considering all cases that are being put to them with regard to the release on medical parole. I think that is a significant step that has been undertaken by the department, and I think it is also part of the Amendment Act that we had requested from yourselves as members of parliament to agree to. The uniform of the remand detainee chairperson, the department is at a very advanced stage to start with provision of that uniform to remandees. We do have material that our workshops are currently manufacturing uniform. The intention is that we want to start with the region of Limpopo, Mpumalanga and West, because of the fact that they have little numbers, to provide them with the uniform. And then once we have done that, we shall then move to the next region, which would be Free State, Northern Cape, and then the after Gauteng. And why are we doing that, Chairperson? One, when the decision was taken of management of awaiting trial detainees, the Department of Correctional Services was not given any additional budget. So the acquisition of the material to manufacture has been done through the department savings. And as a result of that, Chairperson, we have moved significantly slow in ensuring that the uniform is manufactured and offenders are issued with it, because we could only do that once we have savings. As we speak, Chairperson, the uniform is now being manufactured. It will be a yellow uniform with the inscriptions of remand detainee for both female and female. And I think what we need to do is maybe to provide to the chairperson and members the rollout plan as to when we're going to be issuing it out and at which region. And then I think it will be easy to also monitor as you do your monitoring access, monitoring responsibility at the correctional facility. Chairperson, maybe just to mention what my colleagues have said about the appropriate work shift pattern that we'd like to have at the department. One of the major stumbling blocks, Chairperson, was the fact that there was a decision to have a shift pattern, a 2x12 shift pattern, which labor supports fully. Now, for us to be able to implement 2x12 shift pattern, we need a workforce of 60,000, Chairperson. With the challenges that we have had, the history of that, and the fact that at this point in time, our establishment now has been reduced to 41. Correctional services then have to go back and see what can be done under the circumstances, and sit with labor and say, well, this is what we can afford. And on that basis, maybe come with a decision. The shift pattern is agreed. It's just a question of whether correctional services shall be able to implement it fully, because then we will need 60,000 officials, which means 20,000 more than we have at this point in time. It's a challenge that we will be facing in corporate services mainly, but it will have its effect, as the Member of Parliament has said. When you go to facilities, you find that there is a shortage of staff. Offenders are not given the privileges. Offenders are not attended to as they are supposed to. And that is something that, as a department and as a leadership, we are seriously looking into to find a solution as soon as we can. And we think that with this the pending matter that is due for arbitration, once that has been resolved, the department shall maybe be in a position to implement a shift pattern, and as well as a 7-day establishment. I think with regard to 7-day, I'm sorry, with regard to 7-day establishment, Chairperson, The department has implemented the 7 days. Now, what is the 7 days? 7 days is that in a week, we had 5 working days, Monday to Friday. Now, with the 7 day establishment, Saturday and Sunday are also now regarded as normal working days, which would then have the effect of there's a total number of hours that an official who's working at a correctional center must work for him then to qualify for being said to be working 7 day establishment, which means a 45-hour week, which the department and labor have agreed to. Now, with regard to 7 days, the department has fully implemented that, and officials are working 45-hour week, which would normally call your center-based officials. And then the non-center-based are working a 40-hour week as non-center-based. I think we needed to make just that correction so that it is clear to members as well. Because what we are struggling with now at this point in time is a shift pattern that would be acceptable to not only ourselves as the management, but also acceptable to labor as stakeholders. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson and the members, I just want to respond on the question around the care program. If you can see that on the first two bullets, the first one says percentage of HIV positive inmates eligible for antiretroviral treatment, and percentage of inmates with CD4 count below 350. I think I need to confirm that our department has its own measures in place. Our regime is strong. ARVs are provided, I mean, to the inmates. But the challenge is that there was an omission, I think, at the time that we were compiling, I mean, the document, and it was not corrected. But we do have inmates, according to our targets, that are receiving the ARVs. But the inmates at times, they do refuse. Though they are identified, they do refuse to take the treatment. And some of them, because they are on denial, they do have a challenge around that. And some of them do not, I mean, want to take the ARVs. And some statistics say the subsidiary might be that some of them do realize that when they reach a stage where they are terminally ill, they will be given an option of going to a medical in the last bullet, where it talks about the percentage of inmates on medical treatment for complicable diseases, hypertension and diabetes, the reality there is that we do not need any intervention, because the fewer patients that were, I mean, fewer inmates that were sick, we had a target of 8%, but we had about 5.2% of the inmates that fall ill. Thanks.
Commissioner, you've now been serving for the past 3 hours to the views of people that are going to either make or break the success of this department. So I'm going to allow you to be the last one to air your closing remarks, 5 minutes for everybody. And in your closing remarks, you will also touch on the suggestion, request, plea from the chair of the audit committee for an interaction around the risk, certainly with your senior management or at least internal audit. Nobody seemed to touch that. So we're going to ask internal audit to, if you want to say something in closing, we will then ask the auditor general to say something in closing. And then, Commissioner, we will hand over to you to say something in closing, and then we'll adjourn the meeting. If you so wish, if you don't, it's fine. But let's start with the Audit Commission.
No, sir. Thanks. I think not much to be said other than, the commitment is there to do the work and for the department to meet us halfway. As I indicated earlier on, we're still waiting for confirmation on the workshop that we had asked for with the team, and if they could just come back to us on that.
Honourable Chair, thank you for the opportunity. I'd like to make one or two comments. Probably the first being the issue regarding the vetting of staff. I do understand the need for certain senior officials to obtain specific levels of security clearance, but I do believe, and our analysis of the HR framework and policy in the department was also indicative of a weakness here, and that is during the appointment process of staff, there needs to be a tightening up and improvement within HR management within the department of properly vetting individual history, so that by the time a person enters into the department, you don't find out 6 months or a year later there's a problem that occurred back in their history or elsewhere. So vetting goes further than just senior levels. The second point I want to make is the relationship between the audit committee and correctional services is something that has been difficult over at least the past 6 or 7 years that I've been involved with the department. And I need to stress 2 points here. Honourable members, the relationship between internal audit and a department is critical. Their task is specifically to bring their level of expertise and experience to the department from an independent perspective. And that should promote accountability and service delivery of a department or entity. And that happens through the evaluating and monitoring of the responses to risks within the department, which is a key area that they need to deal with, and also to provide oversight over the effectiveness of the internal control environment. Now, that wording is key, the internal control environment, and it's all inclusive, including financial and performance reporting. Now, and also the compliance with laws and regulations. So there's three legs here. One is financial, one is performance, and the other is compliance with laws and regulations. Given an internal audit given a good internal audit department and a sound and effective and competent audit committee, surely at the end of the day, before 31 March, the commissioner and the senior management and the minister should be able to inform you and anyone else what the audit outcome of that department is going to be at 31 March. The question really is, why is there a need for the Auditor General to come in after the close of the financial year to be able to indicate what is wrong or right or misstated or not complied with? What I'm trying to say is that the level of oversight and the evaluation of controls should be of such a nature that everyone should know what the anticipated audit opinion is going to be at the end of the year. It means that effective oversight is in fact taking place, that the audit committee is doing their job, that internal auditors are doing their job, and there's adequate interaction with the executive. And I would push for far more than just one meeting between the audit committee and the executive per year. There are other departments where there's at least 2 interactions per year. I had the privilege of being at a meeting with the Minister of Defence a little while ago, where in fact we invited the chair of the audit committee to attend that meeting and that interaction. And the comments of the audit committee chair I found was also invaluable in taking matters forward and dealing with issues as well. And I think that's really the point I want to make. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair, and thank you, members.
Thanks, Chair. The last 3 hours have been quite valuable for us, getting different perspectives, especially on the backdrop of the third quarter report, the manner in which we presented ourselves, but most importantly is to latch to the comments made by the chairperson of the audit committee.
because we'll be amiss of the opportunity that we have here to respond. I would like to thank the frank comments that have been made in this committee in our presence, because in the last meeting we're not here, for which we are sincerely sorry for not having been here to deal with the issues that were brought to our attention. It is our wish indeed that we have harmonious, good relationships. We as management would not like to engender a culture of saying that they are innocent. We cannot see that unless we have a different agenda. Leadership is about taking responsibility on the actions that we take. But certainly we want to commit ourselves to not only a relationship of working, but also to engender professionalism in our conduct. We want to abide by the principles of making this organization function to be able to achieve its mandate, its objective, my apology, of having a clean audit. There is no other objective that we have. We start on the premise of the fact that we have an audit committee that is competent, that is decisive, that wants things to be done. And I've listened very carefully to the statement made by the chief audit executive when he said, this time around, reports and documents shall be presented on time. Which means, therefore, we will have no excuse whatsoever if we want to mend the relationship and if we want to create an environment where things are done, that documents are not provided at the time frame that we all want to ascribe to. It is also important, Chairperson, to indicate that with this meeting that we had today with the Auditor General, the Audit Committee, and other organizations that are present here, that where we need to strengthen ourselves is on performance information, which is very clear. The organization needs to strengthen its ability to look at the data that it has. We have said this before, and I've said it several times, that we are a number organization, and therefore, whatever we do is pushed by figures. We talk about offenders, we talk about our finance, everything is statistically based. It would have been much easier if our systems were in place, but we have no reason now with GITO in place and to give a time, but very quickly so that we have our systems in place so that we can be able to have the data that we need to be able to assess and be able to provide information that is needed by yourself. The Auditor General has given us a sense as to the role and responsibilities played by all parties. Waiting before the end of the financial year, we should be having a sense as to whether we're heading for a clean, qualified, and that's where things much work much better, because you have a prognosis and an analysis of where things are in the organization. What we want to leave clear here to the committee is that we shall strive towards a situation wherein we sharpen our pencils and be able to provide information very clearly. And that the data that we provide cannot come and amend in a meeting of this nature. And I would like to thank the committee for providing us with the space for us to work and also to create an environment where our officials who participate in this meeting are not here to come and provide a spin. But where we are unable to provide information, we take the notes and be able to revert back to yourselves as quickly as possible. I would like to thank the team that I lead for the work that they have put into this. Where we fail to have 100%, the next time around we should have all the information in line. We cannot be perfect all the time, but we must work towards a perfection. I'd like to thank Ms. Mareka for providing the financial report to yourself. I want to thank CDC Mudisa for providing leadership in terms of the performance indicators, and all the members present here for the work that we have done together. Because it is in the collective wisdom that we do things together that we should be able to accept the responsibility for whatever action that we take. But lastly,
I want to thank the members of the portfolio committee for raising sharp questions. It has never been a dull moment coming here because we can't preempt what questions we have. So every time we know that when we come to meetings, we have to come prepared. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, and thank you very much to everybody that has made it possible that we have this interaction. Tomorrow at 9:30, we will then continue this discussion, but this time it will be the inspecting desk. On your quarterly report, also the inspecting desk on comments on torture in facilities, and the Minister will do the formal thing. So we meet at 9:30 in the old assembly, but members should be there at 9 o'clock. We've got a little bit of housekeeping at 9 o'clock, but we meet the rest of the delegation at 9:30. Thank you so very much. Yes, Commissioner?
Just a question. I see a different flag on your left.
I don't know, this is not ours, this belongs to the executive. We should be asking you, because I think it's the executive that is in the office here and not the legislature, so we will ask that question in the House this afternoon. The meeting is adjourned. Yes, hold on for a second. Oh, no, it's not the old assembly, it's the indicates that we're in S35. It's that side at the LTOP area, S35, not old assembly.